the opinions you love, the history you crave. This is Rant FM Radio.
The recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
The Shining Wizards Network proudly presents the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast with your hosts, the Impact Playa, Phil Rea, and Dave Mega Powers.
There we go. Because I'm
that part wasn't recording.
No, because I'm fucking. I was so wrapped up in. I can edit it in. No big deal.
Okay.
No big deal. And that's pretty much it with that. So, you want to get into some news?
Yeah, let's get into some news.
I got a new song to play. You ready?
Song.
All right.
Is it the one I gave you?
No, we'll play that later. That's the new song, everybody.
Did you get the PWS Sign Girls to sing that one?
No. It's actually Crackhead Bob. Now it's Stern Joe.
Oh, my God. That was horrible.
It's supposed to be horrible, man. We should just start all over because I can't believe I missed like 12 minutes of the show, but that's all right. All right. Anyway,
we'll make it up to everybody somehow.
We have 3 hours of that WPW audio. So
the lost 12 minutes.
That's the news song. It's called "How's Your News." All right. So, getting right into the news, David. The updated Mania card is in full effect. So far, we have to be determined versus Batista versus Randy Orton for the world title. Now, you saw main event last night. I did not see main event.
Oh, boy, it was fantastic. It was off the charts.
All right. Well, tell me about it before I get into the rest of the news.
Well, I jumped in a little bit late. I jumped in basically during the middle of the – how many guys were in that match? Triple threat match. It was Del Rio, Sheamus, and my man Dolph Ziggler. You know, this match was put together last minute because apparently Christian got a concussion on Raw.
Yeah.
Kicked in the head by Alberto Del Rio. And I'm not going to get into any details, but you got to see this. This match was just like one thing after another. Like, it was it was unrelenting. It was balls to the wall action. Ziggler got the win. Not giving too much away because everybody knows who won by now. And they followed it up immediately with a in-ring promo with him and Big E. And this was just like a very classy, you know, two friends.
Yeah, Bob Blackland. Yeah.
What?
It's like, well, Big E Langston, Bob Blackland.
Bob Blackland?
Yeah, Don Tony calls him that because he's like a black Bob Backlund. He's always humble. He's always like,
I kind of see that.
Yeah, he always puts his opponents over. He's that kind of dude. He's not like the angry brother, you know. He's just like the fucking.
He's chill, man.
He's Bob Blackland. Chill. So go ahead, Miff.
Okay, so Bob Blackland is in the ring with Dolph Ziggler. They're getting interviewed by, what's her name, Renee Young. And just really classy, you know, two friends laying it down like, hey, I'm coming for that title. We're going to make history tonight. And Ziggler's like, I'm going to be in that Andre the Giant 30-man battle royal, but I'm going to be in there as the Intercontinental Champion. They both shook hands and went on to have a stellar match later on that evening. And, you know, Ziggler, just surprising me more and more. I've always been a big fan of his, but I'm really enjoying what's happening, you know, with his career right now, even though he's not hardly scratching the title scene as he was before. But, you know, I'm kind of digging how a lot of these dudes who are begging, they're pleading to be in that main event scene. A lot of the shit that they're doing is just phenomenal. So I'm really enjoying, like, you know, dudes like Daniel Bryan, Dolph Ziggler just being hungry as shit, and the fans not getting what they want because it's producing some amazing results in the ring.
All right.
Okay, faggot, what's next?
Well, oh, God. Well, these sounds are driving me crazy.
All right. What's next is the WWE Tag Team title match. Ryback and Curtis Axel will fight Cesaro and Swagger versus the Usos. I like it.
And this is actually happening during Mania, right?
Right, this is all Mania.
This is not
allegedly. Yeah. Allegedly. I don't
allegedly. Know. It's not being shoved to the post-show.
I hope not. Or the pre-show, either way.
Yeah.
The Vicky Guerrero Divas
Championship. Or pre-show, yeah, that's it.
Yeah, Vicky Guerrero's got like a Divas Championship International, which means every Bella on the card is going to fight, what's the nuts, AJ Lee.
It seems like every friggin' Divas is thrown into that match.
Of course, I mentioned last week the 30-man Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. Nobody cares about that. About who's in
Battle Royal?
No, nobody cares of me saying all the people again.
Yeah, we don't need to get into that.
Oh, someone and Los Matadores will be in that tag team title match too. Thank you, Dojo, EDM, and Kid Human. All right, Taker's fighting Brock. Cena's fighting Bray Wyatt. This is a throwaway match. Kane and the New Age Outlaws versus The Shield.
Yeah, that could be on the pre-show.
Right. Daniel Bryan versus Triple H, obviously. And the winner gets a spot in the World Heavyweight title match.
You know, I'm going to say something that's very unprecedented. I'm looking forward to this WrestleMania.
All right. I mean, it's only 5-6 matches. So, I mean, they still got a little while. It's not the complete card. They're gonna go all out. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not. I'm not really that worried about it. I'm more worried about the network. But I'm gonna start playing the network at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. They're gonna have a 5 o'clock pre-show. So they're gonna have basically a 2-hour pre-show before Mania on the network.
God damn.
So I'm just gonna let it play so we don't get any. Plus I hardwired it, so it should be all right.
All right. Good.
Obviously, you know, Hogan's your host. I didn't mind that stuff with Schwarzenegger on Raw the other night.
I missed that. I missed most of Raw, so.
Yeah, you didn't miss much, but it was all right. It was decent. Let me see. We got some more news here. Okay. If anybody's a comic book fan like I was back in the day, you'll know that Todd McFarlane, the creator of Image Comics and Spawn and Who Drew Spider-Man back in the day, he does all these like statues and figures for like sports and other different genres of. He does music. He does like statues and toys of all the other genres besides comic books. He's doing a Randy Savage WrestleMania 5 statue.
Really,
Dave? Dave. They didn't mention how much it's going to be, but dude, I have to have this. I have to have
this. Is this like an officially licensed
WWE? It's an officially licensed WWE statue. It's fucking amazing, dude. Amazing. Wow. Dude, the detail on this is fresh to death. I'm not even exaggerating. It's really good stuff.
So is this part of a series, or this is just a one-off thing?
Well, there's an Undertaker one. Matter of fact, we were at the WPW show, that comic book booth to the left of us that day.
Yeah.
They actually had the Taker statue. Now, the Taker statue is about $300.
Oh, my God.
I don't know how much the Savage one's going to cost. It's a lot. It's not as big as the one that Undertaker, because Undertaker's like, you know, lights up and shit like that and whatever. I don't know what the Savage one does, but it is fresh. They had
it's that ominous smell of formaldehyde in the air.
Yeah, right. Or Crazy Horse if he drank malt liquor like I did. That also smelled like formaldehyde. All right, so it's going to be the WrestleMania 5 appearance. The website has photos of it online. There's a link to it. Each figure stands 18 inches. It says each figure, so maybe it might be a series. It's going to be released this summer, and it's going to be limited to 500 pieces, with each one individually and sequentially numbered and signed by Todd McFarlane himself. So, birthday boys in the chat room, Tony C. Dave, you got your bell?
Yeah, I got my bell.
Ring your bell, Necra. Happy birthday, Tony C. Tony C's going to be joining us in a little while.
Of course he's going to be joining us.
It's the
us.
Birthday.
Hulk Hogan's on the
yes,
show,
Yes, Hulk Hogan's on the show.
Because Tony C was in the cage with Hogan as they power slammed fucking Bundy.
Tony C was the benefactor to Ted Turner. You didn't know that? He funded all the WCW before he sold it.
Yeah, he's on the level Tony C.
If I think Tank just put a link up in the chat room of the Undertaker doll. The Undertaker doll is $295, so Savage has to be around the same price.
Okay, so there's a $5 discount.
Either way. All right, we talked about Dash. I can't even talk. I have Matt syndrome. We talked about the Dish Network not doing the pay-per-views because of the network being released. The Dish Network has changed their tune and will now be carrying WWE's WrestleMania 30 pay-per-view on channels 455 and 456 in high def and standard definition.
And they always come crawling back, don't they?
Yeah, of course, because, again, and I said this when I first announced it, that people, not everybody's going to buy the network. You're still going to have the casual wrestling fan that buys a couple of pay-per-views a year or just buys Mania for shits and giggles. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Anyway, all right. They say that they're going to be evaluating the pay-per-views on an event-to-event basis after Mania. All right. This year's Money in the Bank will be in Boston late June. Might take a road trip for that. I was talking to the wife this morning for maybe someone's birthday.
If okay.
Hopefully he's not up still. He can hear me talking, but hopefully he's sleeping. But all right. This really pissed me off. The original Sin Cara was not happy when WWE tweeted photos of the current Sin Cara, Sin Hunico, character at the Scooby-Doo WrestleMania mystery premiere that in New York City. While the character is in the movie, it was the original Sin Cara's voice used. Cara wrote on his Twitter, "Fraud, fraud," and spelt fraud, F-R-A-U-D-E.
Of course. How else would you spell it?
So you know what, Sin Cara?
Yeah!
That's right.
What?
That's right. You're fired, shit dick.
He got fired? Has he been fired?
What's yeah, he's deal? Fired. He was fired because he can't fucking stay healthy.
Since when?
He hasn't been there in months. It's Hunico.
Yeah,
is
but I don't recall anything official being said about this.
He's fired. All right.
Give him one more chance.
So he can't. He wrote fraud. He spelled it wrong on Twitter, and sent the tweet to Stephanie, Vince, and Triple H before deleting it.
Oh, great.
And speaking of Scooby-Doo, the DVD came out yesterday. I didn't pick it up yet. People on Twitter, Facebook, wrestling websites, stop shitting on Scooby-Doo. Stop. Stop it.
Yeah, stop. Scooby-Doo, come on.
Stop. It's fucking Scooby-Doo, okay? It's I am a product of the 70s and 80s. I am a Hanna-Barbera junkie. I love everything they've put out, even the crappy stuff, even Yogi Bear and everything else.
The only thing I find questionable about Scooby-Doo is when they were doing those celebrity episodes and they had Sandy Duncan and Don Knotts.
Yeah, Batman, Casey Kasem before he...
Yeah, but Sandy Duncan.
Sandy Duncan was huge in the 70s, man.
She was?
Yeah, dude. She was also fucking Peter Pan on Broadway for like 20 years.
I know that, and but she did the fucking that doesn't mean somebody's huge.
She was, dude. She was almost like...
Wait, what was that TV show that she was on?
Dude, she was on a few. She was on like a bunch of variety shows. She did the Wheat Thins commercials back in the day and the Triscuit
commercials.
Yeah, but
there was a show that she was on. I know Shining Wizards Eddie would know this.
Yeah, anybody who looks up saying... Give me some Sandy Duncan information, but dude, it doesn't matter.
Sandy Duncan.
The Muppets did the same. Bro, I have season one of the Muppet Show from the 70s. The Muppets did the same thing, man. They had all the people on from the 70s and 80s and all that shit. So, again, I don't have a problem with Scooby-Doo. You know why? Because he's still relevant.
He's never not going
to
be relevant.
Exactly. So if WWE wants to do this, let him fucking do it.
If anything, that's a huge, feather in the cap for WWE that they're accepted now by the Scooby-Doo group.
I tell you what, I've been trying to get the comic books for my kid since they came out late last year, and my comic book store still doesn't have them. I have to order them online. So, you know what? They sell comic books, they sell toys.
But Scooby-Doo comic books?
No, WWE comic books, but Scooby-Doo is relevant like that, same concept.
Oh.
Stop picking on fucking, what do you call it? Stop picking on. That's right. She replaced Valerie Harper in the Hogan family. That I knew. But that's not, that's like the 80s and 90s. I'm talking about like the fucking 70s.
It's the Hogan family, that's it.
Right, with Mrs. Poole. I knew that, but I'm talking about back in the day, Sandy
that
Duncan.
Bitch, Mrs. Poole.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, but like, stop shitting on Scooby-Doo. Stop. Stop it.
I'm shitting on Scooby-Doo. I'm shitting
you
on Sandy Duncan.
Don't shit on Sandy Duncan either. Don't even.
I got a gripe with Sandy Duncan. You
Why?
Got a problem with that?
What? You don't like Triscuits? You don't like Wheat Thins?
No, I don't eat any of that shit.
Oh,
gluten-free, baby.
So good. So good. Don't be a cunt.
I'm not being a cunt. Don't play that sound clip. I'm warning you.
You're a cunt now. You've always been a cunt.
Oh my God.
And the only thing that's going to change is you're going to become an even bigger cunt.
See, she had...
Now you have some more
look
cunt
at this,
kids.
Dave. She had the Sandy Duncan show. She was on all the Scooby-Doo stuff. She was in... look at all the stuff she did. She was in Pinocchio. She was in Roots! She was in Roots. She was the only white person
probably
in
Roots. Yeah,
probably
a slave owner.
Look at here. Well, everybody who was white in the Roots movie was a fucking slave owner, sadly. My
except
Little Pony.
For, except
the,
for me.
She was
and
the
my
voice
family.
Of My Little Pony. She was in Bonnie. She was
Bonnie
in Dollar Lord.
Duck. What the fuck is...
Yeah. So you
the
know,
handsome teacher. Is that porn?
Dude, she was in The Fox and the Hound.
G-Spots? What the hell is this?
Great fucking movie. Dude, she did South Pacific. Are you kidding me?
If Driving Miss Daisy, another racist movie.
Yeah, dude, you can't shit. You can't hate on Sandy Duncan, man.
I'm totally hating on Sandy Duncan. What has she done to contribute to our show and pro wrestling?
She was on Scooby-Doo. That was the point. All right. So I'm done with the Scooby-Doo rant.
I just like the Batman ones. The Three Stooges ones were questionable,
the
too.
The Harlem Globetrotter ones were dope, too. Stop.
Those were great.
Of course they were great. Luxury Living NYC reports that Shane McMahon and his wife Marissa McMahon filed a legal complaint in the New York Supreme Court this past week against their building. Cobblestone Lofts on 28 Leach Street, which is downtown Manhattan, very, 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 very expensive neighborhood now, in New York City. The building's managing agent and several yet-to-be-identified design firms and construction groups. The complaint asks that damages be determined at a trial, but say the claim would be no less than $50 million plus interest. Shane O'Mac filed the complaint because the water leaks from various points in his penthouse, which the McMahons claim have caused the growth of certain toxic airborne contaminants in their living space. Contaminants reportedly gave the McMahons and their three children, I can't even talk, I got Matt syndrome tonight again, severe respiratory ailments. Also caused potential $5 million plus loss in property value and over $130,000 in damages to furniture, clothing, artwork, and appliances.
What's that?
What's that what? Oh,
that's some sort of like weird Skype sound.
That was my. I have to go into the settings, but yeah. Hold on a second. So, and pretty much they were forced to evacuate the property and are spending around 150. $15,000 per month on rental apartments, and $15,000 a month on a rental apartment. Can you believe that? They won't be able to.
Yes,
rent,
I can.
You well, Shane McMahon. They won't be able to. Return to their home until the problems are fixed. The home was purchased in 2001 for $3.9 million. They began residing in there in 2002 but were forced to vacate in May of 2012. Shane and his wife and his lawyer were not available for comment. Your thoughts?
He's got a hot wife, so, you know, whatever she says goes.
That's it?
That's it. That's all I got to say. His wife is pretty damn hot, so...
Yeah, his wife is pretty hot, actually.
Yeah.
His wife is pretty hot,
actually. For a white woman, yeah.
Hey, where the white women at? Yeah.
Where's Tony C when I need him?
Yeah. You there, Dave? Hold on a minute.
Hey?
You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. It's fucking...
Do you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I was trying to get the fucking Skype sound off.
But... Why do you sound disappointed when you hear me?
No, not you, douche. I'm trying to fucking multitask, and I can't because I wanted to get the Skype sound off so I wouldn't bother you with it. That's the kind of guy I am.
Yeah.
Okay. Take some Facebook questions or what?
Yeah, let's take some. We got a lot of Facebook questions.
We do have a lot of Facebook questions. That's why I want to get into it right away. Let me log into Facebook. So... I don't like the new Facebook format either. It's kind of whack.
Why?
I don't know. I just, for some reason, I don't know. It just don't
looks good to me. I love it.
I know. You would love it.
What is that supposed to mean? because I like things that are nice and things that work.
You gonna make me play the fucking cunt thing again?
No. Okay, good. You should play it for yourself.
Okay. Harry wants to know, what is love? Baby, don't hurt me.
Now, you know, this question's been asked quite a bit. Wasn't it Richard Marx who wanted to know what love is?
I think what Harry was pertaining to was the fact that when Wrestling Soup took a call, they played What is Love after each person hung up. And we can't copy Joey and Mish. So we're going to have to come up with a song to play after the call is called.
Yeah, the Richard Marx, you know.
You want to do that one? Hold on to the night?
Well, didn't he do...
Should have known better. All right. Anyway. Scott Hall is the last inductee to the 2014 WWE Hall of Fame, but he's not. He's going in as Razor Ramon. So Tank wants to know, with Scott Hall going into the Hall of Fame as Razor Ramon, what do you think the rest of the clique getting two rings each? Triple H DX, HBK DX, half of NWO, Nash, X-Pac. He wrote a whole bunch of fucking slashes and backslashes.
Yeah.
I can't speak Tank tonight. I'm too tired. I don't know why he got in as just Razor Ramon, unless they're going to give the NWO their due and give put the founding members in, like Hogan, Hall, and Nash. That would make sense.
And Virgil and Buff Bagwell.
No. I said the founding members, not fucking Virgil.
And what? He was there early on.
No, I meant the founding members, the three guys, Hogan, Hall, and Nash, not any of the other guys, not fucking X-Pac or 6 or 12, whatever the fuck his name was.
It was 6.
Right. Okay. Baza.
I have a little respect for Sean Waltman.
He a bag of fried dicks. Baza wants to know, this was actually in my notes, so we'll get to this when we talk about our throwback of the evening. Baza wants to know, glaring omission here for me, Piper gets his WrestleMania 1 payoff against T in their boxing match, whereas Paul Orndorff, not facing Hogan in L.A., where he should have been, in my opinion, but buried in the opener at Nassau Coliseum, which was one of the best matches on the card, supporting Piper and Mr. T. Shocking. My question has asked itself, really. Should it have been Hogan and Orndorff for WrestleMania 2? Yes, it should have been WrestleMania Hogan.
Yeah, but that feud didn't happen until after WrestleMania 2.
It was the big heel turn, right, because Orndorff was a face at the time.
Yeah.
But Baza makes a really good point. I would have had that heel turn I just would have kept Orndorff a heel.
That was a significant match turn, because he was going against Morocco. Morocco was still hot at the time.
Again, I have no problem with the match. It's one of my favorite matches of all time. But I would have definitely put Orndorff in that title match, because before I discovered Ric Flair and Mid Atlantic, Orndorff was my favorite wrestler of all time. So, All right, let's see. He asks about George Wells losing his lunch in the match with Jake Roberts. Has anything in wrestling genuinely made you want to hurl, Dave? You want to take that first?
Oh, man. Probably still seeing Sid Vicious's leg getting broken after that second rope. What was it? What the fuck did he do? Like a double axe handle? It came off the second rope?
Yeah, that made me cringe.
I don't mind seeing weird shit like that, but that in particular I just did not like seeing. And that's my top one.
All right. Two particular things not made me like hurl, but made me like sick to my stomach, where I was like, sick, nauseous, and upset. The first one was, I believe it was XPW, and I mentioned this on a show a couple months ago, where Terry Funk fought Shane Douglas, and there was a piece of glass from a beer bottle.
Oh, I remember that.
And Funk was like cut down to the tendon, where you could see his bone in his arm.
Ugh.
So that was pretty gruesome.
Was that the one where he was trying to rip off Lizzie Borden's like thong?
Yes. Yes.
And just was, like, unrelenting on trying to rip it off.
Yes. So that was gross because, again, I wasn't, still – I was in EMT school when it happened, so it was pretty cool to see it. Hold on a second. Let's take this call. Turnbuckle Throwbacks, what's your name, where you from, how you be? Hello? Hello? Yo?
Is anybody there?
It's Rage calling in, but I can't get him.
Rage, where you at?
Hello?
You got me?
I got you now. Hello? What's up?
There he is.
What's up, Phil and Mega Powers? How y'all doing?
Well, good, man.
What's going on, Rage?
I just want to, first I got to get this out of the way. Happy birthday to Tony. See that Hogan kiss ass, but anyway, anyway, I just wanted to ask a quick question because it seems like people have like separate opinions on like very, very different opinions on this. And I just wanted to get you guys, opinion on it. So, based on what's going on with Damian Sandow, can we like seriously put blame on John Cena?
You mean the whole burying thing you guys talked about a few weeks ago?
Yeah.
I don't want to blame anybody. I want to blame creative. I mean, Cena's got a level of creative control. We've already discussed that. I'm not like a Cena advocate. But in the same breath, it's very, very coincidental that everybody he's faced that supposedly was supposed to get a push didn't get a push.
Yeah,
I'm not convinced that John Cena is going to management and going, listen, you got to bury this guy, he's terrible, or this guy's not doing his thing, this guy's not pushing his weight, because all those guys are top guys that can work, like legit, like you know the guys like Sandow and Ziggles and all the other guys that are that they were going to get put. And listen, I told you from the get-go that soon as Sandow lost that money in the bank, I knew he was getting buried. Because for some reason, they just didn't have anything for him. You know what I'm saying?
And
like,
just too many talented guys and, you know, only so much TV time to use with them.
Yeah, this is my problem, is that the creative is not doing the deed. They're not pushing ahead.
They're not very creative.
No, well, no, they're not. Because you got guys that are sitting around fighting on the B shows that can go.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to see all the old conjures out of there. I want to see fucking Kane out of there. Get Rey Mysterio out of there finally, which apparently, according to AA last night, he signed another contract because he's going to be in some awful movie next year. But get all the old guys out. Get them all big. Get Big Show off TV. You have a network now. Let these guys work behind the scenes. Let them do fucking legend roundtables. Let them do no, seriously. Let them do something.
Oh, I totally agree.
These guys can still go, but they're.
But Dave, you have guys, and I see Rage's point. You got guys that are sitting around that can fucking go, that can legit go. The Sandows. The Zigglers. You got guys, Xavier Woods. You got guys like Pac you can bring up. The who else is down in NXT? You can bring like three or four guys. What about this Rusev guy?
I talked about this with Lee. I believe that at Mania that Adrian Neville should put his NXT belt on the line at Mania.
I keep calling him Pac. I'm sorry. Yeah, Neville. I called him Aaron Neville on Will's show a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
but I mean, me and Lee, we go back and forth about this because to me, this card, other than the two matches that we're gonna pay close attention to me, this seems like one of the worst Mania cards ever.
All right. Well, I don't know if you're listening from the beginning, but again, there's only five matches.
Yeah, I'm tardy to the party. I'm sorry.
No, I'm saying we talked about this about 10 minutes ago.
Shame on you, Rage.
You got five. You got five matches. It's a 4-hour event. They're not gonna be stingy with it.
They gotta like have like the musical guests and all this other sights and sounds for everybody to enjoy that we all know WrestleMania for. All
right, Rage, hang out on the phone with us for a few minutes. We're going to finish these Facebook questions, and then we'll get into some other shit before we get into the throwback. So hang out with us for a few minutes, all right?
I got you.
All right, let's see. Moving right along, before Rage called in, let's see. From the available card, which three matches would you guys choose to support the Hogan-Bundy thing in L.A.? I like the way it was structured. We'll talk about the pay-per-view in a little while.
Yeah, I agree too. I was thinking about that last night.
Chunky Larry wants to know, is the podcast going to be recorded from three different locations? And I said, yeah, my basement, my man cave, and the bodega down the street because the Mexicans love cage matches. And obviously it is recorded from two different places because Dave's not here. And actually three places.
Yeah, Rage.
Because Rage is on. You guys are both in my neighboring state. Now, Scott wants to know, NXT wrestlers, Sami Zayn, Neville, Tyler Breeze, Xavier Woods, even to a degree, Bo Dallas, and Corey Graves. Corey Graves is what's-his-face, right? Who the hell is Corey Graves? Wasn't he, what the fuck was his name in the indies? I forgot already. Should the WWE bring the cruiserweight division back and get these guys moved up? Well, that's a good one. I was just talking to Rage about that. You can also toss in Sin Cara. No, you can't. Rey Mysterio. No, you can't. And a few others in the division. Well, you can do Sin Cara. I'm just being silly. And a few others in the division to get a nice kickstart. Now, another title? No. I'm not going to do another title only because, again, I spoke about this on a couple of shows, including mine. Titles are insignificant. Titles right now do not mean what they meant 10, even 15, 20 years ago.
And they're not coming back anytime soon.
They're not bringing any of those titles back. You know, I would have a TV title. I mean, you have 10 hours of programming. Put a TV belt out there. You had it in the NWA. You had it in WCW. It worked for to an extent. You had guys that were going to get these little mini pushes. But it worked wonders for top guys like Sting and Arn Anderson and Great Muta and stuff like that. I would, again, like I was just telling Rage, I would bring these guys up and start getting the old conjures out, man. Get them out. There's no need for these guys to be on TV in main storylines. No reason. Not when you have this talent sitting at your disposal every single week on three or four different shows. SmackDown, Raw, Main Event, whatever other show they have going on. So and this is besides NXT.
Hey, Big Show, are they even doing anything with Big Show?
But every couple of months they bring him back for something. Even Mark Henry, and I love Mark Henry to death. I love him. I love his character. I love his T-shirt. I love him to death. But get him off TV. Put him on the panel. They gave Alex Riley a job. They gave him a job.
Commentating.
Get him. Get them jobs. There's a lot of work to be done. The network.
I think it's time for him to just call it quits.
Right. You know, you're 400 pounds. Both of those guys are 400 pounds. You're in your late 30s, early 40s. Actually, you know what? I think Mark Henry is in his 40s. Big Show, I think, the same age as me. I'm not sure. But you're in your late 30s, early 40s still. Just stop. Stop. I think
the general consensus to, people aren't – the magic is worn off on these guys.
I don't know.
But I still love Randy Orton.
Randy Orton, listen, I don't have a problem with Randy Orton. Randy Orton's vanilla to me, though. Talent-wise, he's phenomenal.
Yes.
Randy Orton is almost flawless in the ring. Like, you barely see him botch a spot, ever. Is that a safe assumption? Does everybody in the room agree with me about that?
Yeah, I agree with that.
Rage, you agree with me about Randy Orton or no?
You got a point.
You know, I mean, again, not the best promo guy, not the best good guy, not the best face, but he's a great heel.
Amazing heel.
And he can work his balls off, man. He's better than his father. His father was dope.
Well, it depends on what heel you're talking about, because this is his worst heel work.
Because he's not even a heel. He's like a tweener. He's in between.
Yeah.
Only
if you're talking about that psychotic, no, that
the legend killer crazy stuff. Heel. Yeah, man.
Yeah, that killer. and there's like this like that psycho
like the Triple H heel. Feud.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right.
Triple H feud was great, except for the match at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
No, it was no.
That match was okay, Dave. You didn't like it?
Yeah, no. It was all right.
You know what? It was hyped very well, and it was. I think it told a really good story again, which is,
But it was also after the Taker match, so.
Again, you can't. Sometimes you just can't follow. You really can't. It depends. I mean, guys go out there and listen. How many WCW pay per views? Like, I was watching one today. I was watching the hell was I watching? Like Spring Stampede or something from '96. And it was Mysterio and Ultimo Dragon. And I was like, they followed it up with like fucking Big Bubba Rogers against Earthquake. John Tenta.
Makes sense.
But yeah, no, it doesn't. Because like, can you imagine these two 400-pounders sitting in the back going, holy shit, I got to follow that.
But those guys are not going to have like an amazing match. They're just kind of like, you know, for people to chill out and relax. And
I don't give
until the next match, until the next big match comes
up.
Dude,
if you're a performer, I don't give a shit. Like, I know, listen, for me personally, like, I played in a band back in the day, And if a band before me, like if the opening act blew the fucking room away and I knew I was good, I was confident, I still sat in the back of the stage going, oh my God, I got to follow these guys. I got to, are you serious? I got to follow these guys. But I see your point. But again, it happens. Let's get these questions over here.
We got a lot.
Harry wants to know what the deal is with the Hall of Fame induction video packages, acknowledging just the inductees. I can understand Paul Bearer, but not many people would know he was Percy Pringle. What about Scott Hall? I did mention that.
Yeah, I think we talked about that last week, didn't we?
Character-driven, you know, maybe they'll give him. I don't know. It is what it is. Eric wants to know, do I think the Attitude Era was overrated? Absolutely not.
Oh, I think it totally was overrated.
No way. The Attitude Era had to happen. The Attitude Era had to happen.
Actually, it was during the Attitude Era where I first stopped watching wrestling for several months.
You're not the only one, but for the hardcores, for the diehards, it had to happen. Had to happen because it was WCW taking the spotlight and spending a lot of money on mediocre talent, and they ruled the roost. Vince flipped the script and made his show a bit edgier, got his audience back, and then made the industry a monopoly. So I think it had to happen.
I agree with you, but I don't agree that it was the best thing ever. I didn't feel it was the stuff on television wasn't all that great.
Lopez wants to know if we would have banged Elvira back in the day.
You goddamn right we would.
I heard – here's the rumor. I don't know if it's true or not. And I read this on Wikipedia too, and you can't really base your logic on Wikipedia. But I heard she was like scarred like around her body and stuff. Like she was like she had like a bunch of scars. She was like cut up and beat up and stuff like that. And that's why she only had like her titties always popping out showing because like that was her best feature and she couldn't show anything else because she was all mangled.
You know who she lost her virginity to?
No, but you can tell us, right?
Tom Jones.
Tom Jones, the Flying Dutchman? Ooh.
The singer, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Delilah and...
And she goes on record that she actually had to get stitches after their encounter.
Maybe Tom Jones mangled the pussy up, too. All right.
Well, he definitely did. She's on record for saying that she had to go to the hospital and get stitches. So, yeah.
She probably had Vagine like Sleeve of Wizard. All right.
But, yes, we would totally bang Elvira.
All right. To coincide with Mania 2, if there was a football player, wrestler, battle royal today with current NFL stars, who would you want to see in the ring now? Are you guys, I know Dave's not a sports fan. Are you a
Michael
football
Vick.
Fan? You put Michael Vick in the ring?
Yeah, because I want to see him mangled.
I would definitely put guys like Jared Allen, Julius Peppers, J.J. Wyatt. I wish Espo was here from Tattoos.
I want to see Ndamukong Suh in there.
Yeah, that fucking savage. I'm a Vikings fan, so I hate the Lions. But
oh, God.
Yeah, I can't stand that dude. He's a fucking dirty player. He's you know what? He'd be a perfect wrestler because he's a scumbag football player.
I love him.
Yeah, of course you do. He's a dirty.
Even though I'm a Patriot, I freaking love Ndamukong Suh.
You're a Pats fan? All right, I would like to see and I put some quick guys in there. I put guys like
I'll put Vince Wilfork in there. I'll put Gronk if his body wasn't so fucked up. Gronk
bring back Lawrence Taylor.
Yeah, well, he's probably huffing glue and smoking crack somewhere, so probably not. He's
undefeated at WrestleMania.
I would take the entire defensive line of the Kansas City Chiefs. Because they were beast. They were straight up beasting this year. Who else?
Yeah, then they got to the playoffs and then they were gone.
Yeah, my wife was disappointed. She's a big Chiefs fan. Let's see. Who else would I put? There's a lot of guys. You could do it. You know what, though? The NFL is in a transition.
You know what? Throw the entire – give me the Jets defensive and put in the let's say
I put Justin maybe, Tuck in there. Now he's with the Raiders, but I put Tuck in there. I would definitely put.
I'll put the Jets D against the Lions D. That'll be my battle royal.
That's a nice battle royal.
Yeah,
that's a nice battle royal. I would also put Darrell Revis in there. See if you can hear anybody. I put, yeah, Richie Incognito. Good job, Pastor. Put that racist bastard in there.
What's the dude from the Eagles? What's his name?
Which one? Oh, the N-bomb bandit, Riley Cooper?
Yeah.
I put the N-bomb bandit in there. I would put the N-bomb bandit in there. That dude, he had a good year.
Richie Incognito. I'll even throw Jonathan Martin in there just to sweeten the.
Oh, we can have like a racist.
Just to make it interesting.
We can have a racist bigot battle royal. We can have Colonel.
Yes.
Oh, I would love that.
We could have Colonel De Beers fucking ref the thing. That racist bastard.
I know he's not a player, but I'll throw Jack Snyder in there just
battle royal.
And you got to put like some. You got to have the NFL coaches, like the old school guys, calling a match, like Ditka and Jerry Glanville and. Guys like that, man. You'd have to have all the old conjures, coaches calling at the announcer's table with Jim Ross. You'd have to, because Ross, he's a big football guy. So,
I wonder where She Hates Me is.
Oh, you know, dude, DeSean Jackson. Yeah, it's good. Yeah, Richard Sherman. Oh yeah, we didn't mention the Seahawks, man.
We didn't even mention any Denver players for crying out loud.
Oh, dude. Well, their offensive line, I guess. Their defense didn't. They play like shit, so. But
because they lost. Because they got blew out 43-8.
What was that, Mega Powers? I'm sorry.
Are we done talking about football?
I'm sorry. You're not a sports guy. When people get.
I hate sports.
See, just when you get us started, we just can't stop.
That's why we can't have nice things. All right.
That's why we can't have Chico Santana on the show.
We'll get Chico. Calm your tits. George Rivera.
You have better questions than that bastard Matt and Kevin.
You want me to call you a cunt again?
No.
All right, then.
You're a cunt. You're a cunt now. God. You've always been a cunt. And the only thing that's going to change is you're going to become an even bigger cunt. Now you have some more cunt kids.
Yeah, cunt kids.
Can I just say I love that fucking word?
You know, it's funny. It's funny because it's a bad word here. Like, you can't say it to a girl. You can't.
Like, to me, the word cunt is like the most. That's like a low blow kind of word.
It's the most perfect word, but like overseas, like in Australia, they use it like in everyday language.
It's like friend.
Yeah, they call it like, "What's up, cunt?" I'm like, "Whoa!" And I told AJ Maggie from the Bloke Show, I'm like, "You guys use that word all the time. I love it."
I love calling people that. Like, that's the low blow word. Like, that hits you. That hits home. Like,
and it's so inappropriate. It's so inappropriate. Like that.
And it's not used often, so it has more impact when it is used.
Right, exactly. All right, Uptown George wants to know, I always thought the boxing match between Mr. T and Roddy Piper was a cool attraction. What do we think? At the time, I thought it was great, but after hearing Piper talk about how bad Mr. T was, I watched it again. I was like, Piper pretty much carried that. To his credit, you know.
Well, let's save this for the actual throwback.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, and let's see. Hulk Hogan's at the Heat Pacers game. Who cares?
Really?
Yeah, we hope the Heat loses, though.
I'm praying those bastards.
He just wished Avery Johnson a happy birthday.
Oh, isn't that nice?
Avery Johnson ain't playing no more, is he?
No, he was a coach, wasn't he? ESPN analyst now.
Yeah.
Because he got unceremoniously fired from the Brooklyn Nets.
Well, can't blame him there. They were playing like shit anyway, underachieving. But all right, moving right along. I think that's it with news. We have any more news and notes there, Mega Powers?
I don't have any news.
All right, let's take a quick break. Wet the whistle. Rage will let you go. And check out the chat room. Hope you hang out with us for a while, and we'll maybe get you back on later. We'll get Tony C on. We'll shoot the shit after we're done with the throwback, and we'll call it a night.
Oh, God, for Tony C. Oh, God.
It's his birthday, man. We got to show the Hulkamaniac some love tonight. So.
Why don't you get him started?
Yeah, why not?
All right, take it easy.
He entertains me, so.
No, seriously, right. He does. All right, Rage, we'll talk to you later, brother.
All right, later.
Take it easy.
All right, Mega Powers. I'm gonna play some. I'm gonna play some shit here.
You gonna play the song I found?
I'm gonna play it for the outro.
Okay.
I'm gonna play it at the end there for you. I know. I already got it. It's already in there. So
good.
So we'll do it all right. No.
Excellent.
Excellent, Smithers. Excellent.
Yes.
All right. So we'll do that, and then we'll come back, take a quick break. We are the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast, www.rantemradio.com. We are a Shining Wizards Network production, and we'll take a break and be right back.
G'day folks, AJ here. When you've finished listening to this fucking podcast, head on over to iTunes or Stitcher and check out myself, Lee and Punch on the Fucking Bloke Show.
We talk about a whole variety of topics like comics, cartoons, movies, television, and sports.
And we're often joined by guests like Deck from Ireland and other friends from all over this wonderful planet.
Once a month, we jump into the DeLorean and take a look at the history of professional wrestling.
And once a month, we look back at actual history with TWiT, This Week in Time.
And once a month, we talk about whatever the fuck we want to talk about.
So please follow us on Twitter at TBSPOD.
And talk to us in the Facebook group, The Bloke Show.
And I don't give a fuck what you cunts do, just listen to this fucking thing.
Podcasting Network.
As soon as you're done with the Turnbuckle Throwbacks, head over to rantemradio.com. That's right, rantemradio.com. We got you covered all week. You got the rant live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. You got the Turnbuckle Throwbacks every Wednesday at 9 p.m. You have the Wrestling Call-In Show every Saturday at 11 p.m. And on Sundays, it's What Are You Reading with the Surfer at 6 p.m. It's the opinions you love, the history you crave. It's Rant EM Radio. Hey, it's your boy, the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Ray from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. When you're done with our show, head over to the Shining Wizards Network, shiningwizardsnetwork.com, home to many great shows covering a variety of topics, including pop culture, heavy metal, music, sports, television, movies, and, of course, wrestling. Shows like The Fallen Angels, Stickman and Apex Radio, The Wolfman Jack Foley, Just Incredible's Pro Wrestling 101, The Midnight Jury, Two and a Half Wrestlers, of course, us, the Turnbuckle Throwbacks, The Neckbreaker Podcast, and, of course, The Shining Wizards. So what are you waiting for? Go to ShiningWizardsNetwork.com right now. Shining Wizards Network. Entertainment here.
G'day folks, AJ here. When you've finished listening to this fucking podcast, head on over to iTunes or Stitcher and check.
Hey kids, you like the show? Do you like the logo on the show? Well, we put the logo on a t-shirt. Go to prowrestlingtees.com/turnbuckle throwbacks and buy the shirt. The shirt is cheap and it helps the show with original artwork by Dean Stahl. So what the hell are you waiting for? ProWrestlingTees.com/TurnbuckleThrowbacks. Buy the shirt. Buy the shirt. Buy the shirt! Hey, it's your boy, the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Rea, inviting you to listen to The Midnight Jury. Mike Norenganger and Adam Henning host The Midnight Jury, a podcast that transports you back to the last old-school generation, my generation. They debate in detail 80s and 90s pro wrestling, horror movies, and pop culture. Before the internet, before Blu-ray, before cell phones, there was the last old-school generation. Check out The Midnight Jury on the Shining Wizards Network. ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. Entertainment here.
How would you describe the Scrum Cup? Well, it's a little bit like catching your parents having sex. It's awkward. It's quite funny, and yet it's not something you want to tell everyone about. That's why we've made this here commercial for you to listen to every week. The Scrumcast, the finest rugby podcast in the history of, well, rugby podcasts.
Every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. on Mixlr.com. Also available on iTunes and on Stitcher.
Not a promise that I didn't make.
It's the most important return.
fucking. And when I'm not getting fucking,
now I'm wondering what I did wrong.
There you go. Want some Richard Marx for you?
Now you're talking.
There you go. Some Richard Marx for you. www.randy.
Wait a second. Can you just let the song keep playing?
All right.
It's really good. I love it.
All right, Casey Kasem. Oh boy. And there's the breakdown. Yeah, yes. Nice mullet though.
Great mullet.
Alright. Alright, enough of the Richard Marx. We are the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. RantDMRadio.com, ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. Fun for your whole family.
We need to do a Richard Marx episode.
Do we really?
Yeah.
Jesus. I would ring the bell. Get ready for the throwback. All right. You like that, huh?
I thought I was going to ring my bell.
Jesus Christ. Let me take a call. Hold on a minute. Topical throwbacks. Make it quick.
What's going on, Big Papa? It's George. How you doing?
What's up, Georgie? What do you got going on?
No, I'm chilling, man. I was trying to call in earlier when you were talking about the Hall of Fame class that's going in.
Uh-huh.
And whatnot. And, you know, the big joke about it, like, to me personally, it's Cologne getting in. Like, you know, he's the Jerry Lawler of the Caribbean, if you ask me. But with all the heat that, I mean, with the stink that's followed his career, you know, covering up for Invader number one and, you know, having a hand in what possibly covering up the death of Brody. You know what I mean? I mean, why could the WWE induct him, you know, into the Hall of Fame? You know, I just find that like kind of like weird, you know?
Dave, you want
to
take...
No proof.
There's no proof that he was involved in killing Brody,
but I think, if anything, you know, how it was handled afterwards, you know, we had Emerson on, and he talked about when he called... what was it, like the municipal court or whatever, you know, to get some sort of paperwork or documents on it.
Right.
You know, the woman, you know, whispered, you know, not to call back and that they don't have anything.
Well, what's funny about that? When I was a young boy, I went to like 5 events down in WWC in Puerto Rico in the summer. You know what I mean? And it was like the type of people that were around that atmosphere, you know what I mean? Like, you know, that like handled the events, whatever it be, security or whatever. It was always kind of like shady and whatnot. And let me tell you, the year that Brody died, I didn't go that summer. I had to do summer school and whatnot. But I remember I was there the year before when I was in Caguas when Cologne took on Abdullah the Butcher. And it was like a gym and whatnot. But still, I mean, this shit packed house. Like, it was like in an armory and whatnot. Nothing like you would see in TNA, dude. It's still packed house. And these dudes just tore the shit up, like going on to the crowd and whatnot. And you know, just like I looking at, like, I guess, like, from a business sense, that's why they're going to induct them. I mean, that's bullshit, man. You know, he shouldn't be. I mean, you're going to have to consider Chris Benoit at least 10, 15 years down the road. That's how I'm looking at it.
Well, let me give you my take on it, and Dave will probably agree with my sentiment. Well, one, they're trying to buy WWC, first of all. That's first of all.
Yeah.
Right.
Second of all, the territory was always hot, no matter how shady it was, no matter how bad the promoting was, and no matter how many
wrestling is shady to begin with,
right?
So.
But what Georgie was trying to say in Puerto Rico, the entire scene around it was shady,
right?
Like,
yeah.
not even just the promoters and the wrestlers, the town and the people, because they're trying to, you know, it's harder for these organizations to break kayfabe, only because of their situation where they are, you know, geographically.
Right.
For me, anyway. I know for a fact that, I mean, you can call Carlos Colon or Jerry Lawler Puerto Rico or the Caribbean all you want, and that's fine. That's a legit gripe. My thing was, they never had anybody else down there besides Hercules Ayala and a couple other guys that were legit good wrestlers.
TNT.
Well, I mean, a few. Savio Vega was good. I'm not saying he wasn't. I'm just saying, like, you didn't have a core of guys that Carlos can push to other territories.
And Phil, not for nothing, man. Let's remember back in the days when Savage was still in the Mid South, and like in the he would like make stints out in the Caribbean and fight Cologne out there and shine up Cologne, make him look good. Before Savage made his run to the WWE, he wrestled out there.
They all did.
You know what I mean? They all did, exactly. Dude, they would shine up Cologne and make this. You understand what I'm saying?
Right before, was it last year? Yeah, right before I moved into my home a year ago, I got WWC anniversary, like the best of.
And right, yes.
Everybody on these, it's two discs, and everybody on these discs were just touring guys, like Flair, Fort Ayala, you know, Dutch Mantel was on it, obviously Bruiser Brody was on the card.
Yes.
The thing is Carlos Colon's contribution mainly was getting wrestling up and running in that part of the world. So it's the same thing as giving Bill Watts his due as being promoter in the Mid-South. Cologne just innovated the Caribbean, and he was one of those guys, right place, right time. Of course he's going to make himself the fucking champion 27, 30 times. if you own the company and you had more than five moves, I don't want to hear where you're from. You're going to put yourself over from Jump Street.
Yeah, just like my boy Great Power Udi.
Udi's been the Nigerian champion like 97 times.
He's also the United States champion, so you better watch who you're talking to.
Exactly.
Watch it.
Right. So now
I get the red card, Phil.
So now he gets in. He's going to get in. His kids are wrestling for them right now. Not Carlito, but Primo is.
Right.
And honestly, they're going to induct him, and he's going to have his, you know, 10 minutes, and that's pretty much it. He's going to be recognized as primarily a promoter. When I was down in Florida in the 80s on Christmas break visiting family, that's the only time I got to see that stuff. They didn't play that stuff up here. We just got the Lucha shit up here from Mexico. We got CMLL, we got AAA.
We never
got WWC up here, which was a shame because that was the good stuff. And
I mean,
it was good. No, it was great. I love WWC, and him being champion 30 times didn't bother me. He's going to be known as a promoter. He's going to be in there as a promoter. He's not a legendary wrestler.
Exactly. Yeah, that's how I feel.
And they're some of the originators of the hardcore style, so that takes its place in history too. You know.
I mean, he's always been surrounded too by good hands in his promotion. Let's think about it. I mean, Dutch Mantel for a while. Wrote for him at one point. I think Conan helped him out when he needed it, you know, help with some storyline or whatever and shit. You know, he's always been around somebody that could help him with his promotion. I think he gets a little too much credit. That's just my opinion, you know. And like, I don't know, man. Him just getting in there—that's kind of. I mean, if it's a business sense, I guess so. But you know, that's bullshit, man.
It's straight up business, brother. It's not.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys in wrestling who, you know, they turn a blind eye just so they can get what they want.
Right place, right time, and on top of that, he had guys, and like George mentioned before, he had guys around him in the business. Dude, the Invaders was so over in the late 70s, early 80s up here in the WWF.
Oh yeah,
and obviously one of the Invaders was, we all know what happened. But, like, they were up here, and that was also Cologne's link. Because now they've been exchanging talent from the get. So now you guys like TNT, Savio Vega. Savio Vega was their best import.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Savio Vega was the only guy. I mean, you want to talk about Carlito winning the IC title and all that. Carlito had a nice little run. Couple years ago.
Not to cut you off. Hey, he had a big hand in helping Stone Cold become Stone Cold Savio Vega. Let's not forget that.
Yeah,
they had a lot of good matches coming up.
Yeah, he was the first feud. The thing is too is that, you know, that working relationship when the territories was still running hot for a little while, Vince sent guys to Puerto Rico. Vince would send guys to ECW. Vince would send guys to Ohio Valley and Florida and shit like that for the Grams and whatnot. So, I mean, there was still that talent exchange, and it was always that connection. And this is a strictly a power move. This is strictly a power move. This is not nothing to do with, oh, I'm going to I owe Carlos Colon. No, he doesn't owe Carlos Colon nothing. And you know what? Dave and I, we talked about it with Emerson. We know Carlos Colon had a hand in covering up the whole Brody thing. You know, they just can't prove it because everything was covered up, like, you know, like CSI type shit, you know?
Hey, my cousin's out there. I mean, they hardcore rabid Puerto Rican fans out there. I'm Puerto Rican, by the way, and they even said it. They said, oh, no, man, he got pulled up in here, man. He covered that shit up. Even, you know, the most hardcore fan out there, they love Brody in Puerto Rico. And, you know, I felt like when I heard that episode when you had Emerson on, I was like, wow. I got the book, by the way. And I was just, yeah, man. And I'm just like, man, I wish, man, that's a story that needs to be told. If they could make a movie of Bruiser Brody, that would be awesome, huh?
Yeah. We'll see what happens. All right. Listen, brother, we're going to let you go. We got
all right, guys.
All right. And
thanks for calling, George.
Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye, guys.
We'll talk to you soon.
All right, man.
All right.
Peace. All
right. So, and there you have it. Mr. Rivera, Uptown Georgie, we'll call him.
Uptown Georgie.
Uptown
all right.
Georgie. All right. So you want to get into our throwback?
Yeah, let's do this.
Let's play it up, baby. And now, here is your throwback of the week, sponsored by the Shining Wizards Network and Rant EM Radio. Like that world class, huh?
You know, whenever I hear that song, I feel sad for some reason. I don't know why.
Do you really? They have a lot. They chronologically put all the episodes, or some of the episodes, up on the network.
Yeah.
And I was watching, like, that's the way to do it. Like, you could follow along, which is like, this is like back in the day, like you're a kid. You're like, oh my God, let's see what happened next episode. Andre and chasing around Michael Hayes. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, they're doing that with the early Raws. They're doing it with the early ECWs. It's fantastic. I love it.
Right. So, WrestleMania 2.
What the world has come to.
I'm going to go on record, and I said this last week when Eddie from The Shining Wizards called in. This is my favorite WrestleMania.
And I have a question for you.
Go ahead, brother.
Why?
Well, again, I didn't have cable.
You don't even know.
No. Honestly, dude, this is an emotional thing for me. It's
You're not going to start breaking down crying like I was about to with the World Class song, were you?
No, I'm not going to break down and cry. I did get a bit emotional talking about it with certain people like the last couple of days because it's sentimental to me.
Because of the Ray Charles performance.
No, had nothing to do with Ray Charles.
Susan St. James.
No. I didn't know she was married to Dick Embusol, by the way, until I read up on it. But
I didn't realize that she was on Kate and Ally until I read up on it today.
I told you that last week.
I don't remember.
Yeah, obviously not. All right, so we didn't have cable, and everything was still pay-per-view was spanking new. Here's the thing. My godmother at the time got she had the first two WrestleManias, and every year she'd pick me up and she'd take me to a house and she'd show me these videotapes, and I didn't even have a VCR. She had a VCR. She was like the first one in the family to have a VCR, like a top loader one with the fucking remote was still attached to the VCR.
Wow.
Yeah, and just as a kid, and I you know, again, I can't remember what happened to me last week, but I can tell you what happened to me 30 years ago. And
let's hear it.
This was the day I go there. She, you know, she said, I got this tape. She didn't tell me what it was. And I was like, all right, whatever. So she puts the tape in, and like, all of a sudden, it's the feed. And I'm like, oh, my God, I lose my mind. Like, this is, like, the best thing ever. And, like, you have to understand something. This was the first pay-per-view ever. They didn't even have pay-per-view yet. This was...
I thought the first pay-per-view was the Wrestling Classic.
No, this was the first pay-per-view. If you had cable, the Wrestling Classic was on cable television.
Really?
The first pay-per-view that you could order on your satellite system or your cable system was WrestleMania 2. Everything else was closed circuit. Okay. And this was the deal. And for me, as a kid now, this is 1986, I'm 11 years old, you know, I could tell you that the hype around this locally, similar to WrestleMania 3, with the newspapers and the magazines and, you know, this is when you still couldn't buy a program in the store. You have order it and whatever. You get the magazines to set you up and stuff like that, you know.
Had to do the fill out the form inside of the magazine.
Right, right. So this is, again, 1986. And 86 was a good year for me anyway as a kid. I mean, as a sports fan, as an athlete, you know. And the home life wasn't great. And I don't have to get into that on this podcast anyway. It's just it's personal shit. But the personal shit was bad. But anytime I got to see something like this or see a videotape or go to a video store and rent the tape or see something, it was a big deal.
Mm.
And this was it. This was April 7th, 1986. This was the combined attendance was over 40,000 people. Now, you say that's not a lot of people. But considering the venues weren't that big.
And it was only the second WrestleMania.
Right.
So that was actually a lot.
Right. So my godmother, Aunt Joanne, I'm dedicating this episode to her because it was four so far. I would never have seen this. She had gotten a videotape from one of her coworkers who lived out like out east in the suburbs of Long Island. Because, again, the five boroughs didn't have cable till about 4 or 5 years later. So, you know, it was three venues. The Nassau Veterans Memorial Coliseum in beautiful Long Island, Nassau County, Long Island. The Rosemont Horizon in Chicago, outside of Chicago, and the Los Angeles Memorial Sports Arena.
I wonder where that was at.
Right. This was the first WrestleMania to be shown on pay-per-view, like I mentioned, and it was the only WrestleMania to be held on a Monday.
Yeah, which is well, didn't they have other pay-per-views? Didn't they have like a SummerSlam, like SummerSlam 91 was on a Monday?
I don't think so.
I know that they did have other pay-per-views on Monday, but I guess as far as WrestleManias go,
this was the only mania to be held on a Monday.
Yeah.
I'm sure they had other pay-per-views, like you said, during the week, but this was the only one. If the chat room can help us out with that, I appreciate it.
And of course, this Tuesday in Texas was on a Tuesday, supposedly.
Right. So, your three main event feuds were set up, as I was trying to plan a pre-show from March of 86, which was the broadcast of Saturday Night's main event. Your main feud was King Kong Bundy and Hulk Hogan for the WWF Championship in the steel cage. They had
the only world title match in a cage,
right?
At a WrestleMania,
right? Right. Chat room saying Taboo Tuesday, right? But this was the first. This is the only WrestleMania to be held during the week. They had wrestled Hogan and Bundy had a story. They wrestled beforehand. November of 85, and then Hogan teamed up with Andre against Andre's rivals there, Stud and Bundy. You know, they just went back and forth until the Saturday Night's main event, which was in March of 86, when Hogan was about to pin Morocco in his match, and Bundy ran in the ring, and the two-on-one assault went down, and they, you know, they gave him the avalanche and messed his ribs up. So now Hogan's playing off the injury.
How many avalanches? It was like five avalanches.
Yes, he gave him five avalanches. Hogan was seriously injured in the script, obviously. He went against doctor's advice. You saw Hogan in the gym working out with the doctor, with the weight.
Yeah, fucking deadlifting and doing God knows what with like hundreds of pounds. Meantime, this doctor, who I actually found out was Nick Bockwinkel's brother. So he wasn't even a real doctor.
No, no.
So, you know, this guy was a Dr. Bob Ponovich. I think that was the name that this guy was using. You know, saying like, oh, Hogan's not all that. You know, he's got some herniated discs, but it's okay for him to wrestle. Right. Meanwhile, he's deadlifting thousands of pounds, and Hillbilly Jim is there giving him the thumbs up. This was insane.
So, you know, this is the, you know, this sets up the big match, the cage match for the main event at WrestleMania 2. Of course, the three different venues had three different main events. The main event in the Nassau Coliseum was the boxing match between Hogan, I mean, I'm sorry, between Mr. T and Roddy Piper. The main event at the Rosemont Horizon was the British Bulldogs versus the Dream Team for the tag team titles. And, of course, obviously the main event in Cali was Hogan and Bundy. The boxing match was set up because of the beef from WrestleMania 1. Hogan came on Piper's Pit and said, I can't box you, but I have somebody who would. He boxed Bob Orton on Saturday Night's main event.
Yeah, so ace.
That set up the match with Piper and T. Now, Piper, being Piper, was the best storyteller in the business at this point. They wind up double teaming Mr. T, and they take a belt and they whoop him.
I think that's where Ventura said on television on Saturday Night's main event while this is going down, this is just like Roots 2, McMahon.
And he said that. And when he said that, I was like, they'll never get away with that.
And they did.
Well, no, they won't get away with that now, but.
Oh, no, not now.
No, not at all. The card, your announcers for the first venue was Vince McMahon and Dave mentioned Susan St. James.
From Kate and Allie.
From Kate and Allie, from a bunch of stuff.
But mainly Kate and Allie.
Well, Kate and Allie was her break. She did a lot of TV shows and stuff like that. She was in a lot of dramas and 70s shows and stuff like that. Susan St. James had a real good resume up until Kate and Allie. She married Dick Embersole, who ran NBC for a while. So
that's why she's on WrestleMania 2.
Yeah, because Dick Embersole had a great relationship with Vince back in the day. That was the whole boom.
And he's just whoring out his wife on WrestleMania 2.
And it made perfect sense. I mean, she was obviously not a big fan, but a big enough fan to know who everybody was, and I applaud her for that.
Like, what was she saying, like, throughout the, that portion of the event? Like, she kept saying, like, this one line over and over again. I can't remember because it was so annoying, I blocked it out of my head.
At what, during the whole car you're talking about?
Yeah, specifically during the George Steele Savage match. Like, she's like, oh, my, or some shit like that, like, over and over again.
Yeah, she kept rooting for the good guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty much her shtick. Celebrities at ringside for the first venue was Cap Calloway, Mr. Heidi Heidi Ho. Chalk of Thunder, Daryl Dawkins from the 76ers. G. Gordon Liddy, Joan Rivers. I hate Joan Rivers. Smoking Joe Frazier. Lou Duva was in the corner of Mr. T, very popular boxing trainer back in the day.
Yeah.
The man himself, Ray Charles, and some guy named Herb. He was like, I forget what Herb. Herb was like I think it was a fast food chain.
Yeah, it was a shitty Burger King campaign that flopped, which was funny because they had, what the hell is her name? The Where's the Beef lady.
Oh, Claire Peller. Yeah, she was in that too, Where's the Beef. And
Claire Peller. She was there for the, thankfully, at a different location, so that there wouldn't be any beef between her and Herb for the Battle Royal over at the Rosemont Horizon.
All right, so let's get into the Nassau Coliseum portion of the event. Now, how it worked was they had three different venues, and they would have a series of matches. Then after the last match, they would lower a screen down and close circuit the rest of the match from wherever it was televised from at that point.
Yeah.
So we'll go to New York right away, and your first match was Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff, like Dave said, versus the Magnificent One Don Morocco. This is one of my favorite matches of all time.
Really?
Yeah, only because of, like I said, I get to, I love Paul Orndorff, and I really liked Morocco. Even as a kid, I liked Morocco, and when I got the tape, I was like, I was like, this is great. I can't believe I'm going to see I was looking forward to the match.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was so happy to see this tape. I guess maybe because it wasn't like a great, it was, wait a second. Nobody's in the chat room saying, all right, you turnbuckle guys, I'm here. But no penis jokes or N-words, if you please. Did we mention, we don't drop the N-word, did we? No, you did first couple of shows, but we didn't drop the N-bombs today, right?
Supposedly.
No, okay. All right. Moving right along. I love this match, and it wasn't like a great, fantastic, great.
It was a brawl.
Yeah, it was good. It was a brawl. It was a double count out. It was,
It was just one of those solid matches where, again, you know, it's two guys who you don't know who's going to win this match. They're both equally matched, and it's just back and forth.
Right. So it was a match only lasted a couple of minutes, so it wasn't like a big, you know, again, just, I guess, nostalgia reasons, whatever, I don't know. But I just enjoyed these two guys fighting. They're two talented guys, and, you know, anyway.
But was there a build-up for this match, or was it just put together?
No, it was a filler match. I don't think, again, it was Orndorff was a face.
That's a hell of a filler match.
They turned, yeah, after WrestleMania, they turned on Orndorff. They blamed Orndorff for the WrestleMania loss.
Yeah, but that was more of, wait, was Morocco even? No, Morocco wasn't part of that little faction.
No, Morocco was just doing his thing with Fuji the Stooge.
Yeah.
Fuji Vice,
and awesome. Their stand-up was phenomenal, by the way.
Yes, it was. Your next match was the Intercontinental Championship match between Macho Man Randy Savage and George Animal Steel.
And these guys were married together for a while. This match was like several times on Saturday night's main event here at WrestleMania.
So it was... like Dave mentioned, Savage was with Miss Elizabeth. Savage and George Steele. Again, George Steele was on his last leg at this point. He's been wrestling since the 60s.
Oh, yeah. He was main eventing with San Martino, so still looked the same. But regardless, you know, he was kind of on his last legs. Actually, it's funny that we're talking about this now because, you know, we all know Savage was, like, you know, very scripted.
Yeah, meticulous. We mentioned that last week.
And I recall hearing, like, a shoot interview with George Steele talking about when Savage came up to him with a script. I'm not sure if it was for this match or when, but Savage came up to him with a script. And, you know, we all know George Steele is very old school and, you know, called in the ring.
Right.
And he just... took the script from Savage, who's handing it to him, and he just tears it up and throws it in the garbage can, you know, by him, and basically just tells him, like, you know, I'm old school, and we're just going to call it in the ring. So I don't know how this match figured out into all this, but apparently George Steele wasn't putting up with any of Savage's choreographed shit.
No, again, George Steele, an old-timer at this point. He does pin Steele with the roll-up and puts his both feet on the ropes for leverage.
This is bogus. It didn't even look like he really got any leverage on him.
No, not at all. It looked really, 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 really terrible.
It looked homoerotic.
Yeah, I guess, if you want to look at it like that.
And Susan St. James, she was into this match.
You said homoerotic, right?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
He was just kind of like laying on him. He was strange.
Okay, faggot, what's next?
So so now he does that and gets the win. As a result, Savage obviously retained the title. Late in the match, though, Steele became the first man to ever kick out of Savage's patented elbow from the top rope.
Yeah, that was interesting.
That was weird because now you see Savage every week dropping the elbow on people and then freaking – you know what? Honestly – to me, and after watching it again twice in the last week and a half, I don't think that was supposed to happen. I think George was just being a dick, didn't want to finish the match, and kicked out. That's what I think. I don't know if...
Yeah, I don't know the man well enough to really say, you know, what his mentality was. All I can say was it worked, you know, for a guy like George Steele at that time. Like, when I was a kid... You know, granted, I wasn't really watching at this point because I was way too young. I was 2 years old.
True.
I'm not watching wrestling just yet. Unless I was, I don't know. But anyway, he was so over, regardless of, like, what era he was in, that whatever the guy was doing, it was believable. You know, when I was a kid, I thought the guy was a fucking animal.
So, of course... George, after the match, eats the turnbuckle, and he had three turnbuckles at that point, but that was annoying. I just hated that, because if you went to a garden show, particularly, every time George D would wrestle, it took them fucking 20 minutes to clean the ring. This is before intermission, you know?
He's got to eat the turnbuckle pad.
I understand that, but when you're a kid and you're at the show and you're anxious, it's just pain in the ass. But all right, anyway.
I loved it when he was eating the turnbuckle.
I liked the first one. When you eat three of them and you fucking, and the ring crew's got to come in and clean it up, it just, it again.
The man was hungry.
You know what?
If you were an animal, you know, you'd be doing the same.
Nice. Surprise. Anyway, the third match was the, from the Coliseum was Jake Roberts and George Wells. George Wells was a journeyman at this point.
CFC football player.
Yes. George Wells gets the unearthly task of fighting a newcomer, Jake the Snake Roberts. Jake was new at this point.
Yeah.
Hits him with a DDT, and, I mean, this really wasn't a great match in terms of...
It was just a debut match for Jake Roberts. George Wells, more or less, you know, he wasn't really getting pushed anywhere. He was just like a... He was a pretty solid wrestler, I'll say that much. There's something on the network, one of the house shows, I think at the Maple Leaf Gardens, where he's facing Bret Hart.
Yeah.
And they have a good match. They had a good match. So
he was solid. He was a journeyman. He was not terrible. He was a feeder guy to the new heel. So
yeah, probably just another dude who had some football injuries, couldn't perform anymore. So probably knew a few wrestling friends or something like that, and got put into the WWF.
Right, right. All right. So your first main event of WrestleMania 2. Was the closing match of the Nassau Coliseum segment. It was the boxing match between T and Piper.
I actually really enjoyed the boxing match.
Right, Mr. T.
Granted, there was no, conclusive, winner, but, knowing what we know now, there really wasn't going to be any conclusive winner, but it was just fun just seeing these guys beat the shit out of each other and, Piper has a story about Mr. T, how this match was choreographed. They did have like a plan for it beforehand. And there was a specific punch that T was supposed to land. And it's the one that knocked Piper out of the ring in round three. And according to Piper, he completely missed
the punch. Yeah, I saw that.
And Piper was just, livid after that, which, he ended up throwing the fucking stool at him. In between rounds.
Piper hates Mr. T. And on two different Legend roundtables, he mentions this. He hates Mr. T because Mr. T... Piper claims that he was saving the business by celebrities that came in and, tried to take the spotlight. And his reasoning was that he didn't want the guys coming in taking something with them. Like, he wanted them to come in, make the impact, and help the storyline go along, but not walk away with something like, hey, in other words, Piper was being really nice and saying, I don't want anybody stealing my spotlight that I worked for all these years, and have some schmuck from Hollywood come in and work it. Like, he owned it.
Yeah, and I think most wrestling fans are in that kind of mindset, whether it's a Snooki coming in or what are some other shitty celebrities that got into the ring.
You know what?
I didn't want Lawrence Taylor to win, even though
Want Lawrence Taylor to win anyway. But they praised guys like Taylor and Money Mayweather because they understood the business. I don't care if they understood the business. They have respect. Like Michael Hayes pushed the word respect around with these. Nobody mentioned Cyndi Lauper, right?
No.
And which bothered me because if you didn't have Cyndi Lauper's storyline, you wouldn't have WrestleMania.
Wouldn't have the WWF period.
No, not at this caliber, no.
No.
So, I understand.
If it wasn't for her endorsements along with Mr. T. Mr. T also is a big part of it, too. But if it wasn't for their endorsements, because they were fucking hot at that time.
Mr. T was white hot. Rocky, yeah. A-Team. Again, maybe not the nicest guy in the ring or not the guy to work with, but you know what? He was on like I mentioned last week, he was on every cereal box. We're going to talk about him next week, too, because we're doing WrestleMania 1. And, he was on every cereal box, every action figure. He was on every TV show, had his own cartoon. So
if you had your own cartoon and your own cereal, you were hot shit. That's all I got to say back then.
Right, and entertainment was making the crossover to professional wrestling. So, there was a time where it was taboo. They didn't want to do it. But now the genres have crossed, and now it's full-blown sports entertainment.
Yeah, but for a lot of wrestling fans, especially the diehards, it's, you know, just seeing these guys win was such a huge insult. But I don't know, Mr. T was kind of a different caliber, in my opinion. I wanted to see Mr. T beat the shit out of Piper as a kid.
Piper was disqualified in the fourth round for body slamming Mr. T, and that pretty much broke the fight up. So,
and the referee immediately DQ'd him, and pandemonium broke loose. Smoking Joe Frazier, you know, punchy as shit, trying to slam Lou Duva in the ring.
Now we're done with New York, and let's lower the screen and take it to Chicago. We're in Chicago, Illinois, the Rosemont Horizon. Your announcers were Gorilla Monsoon, Mean Gene Okerlund, Kathy Lee Crosby.
She was looking pretty good.
Yeah, she was quite the looker, as my grandfather would say.
With her fucking tinfoil suit, her aluminum foil spacesuit.
It was the 80s, Dave. They're all fucking space cadets back then.
You got that right.
Celebrities included, like Dave mentioned, Clara Pella, which thank God she didn't even get her Where's the Beef off. By the time they announced her, she was like, now? She kept saying, now? Now? Now?
Yeah, she was saying now, but the mic wasn't on. And she's just like holding up the mic for some reason and screaming. She's fucking like 90 years old. God knows how old she was.
Celebrities included Clara Pella, Dick Buckus, Ed Two Tall Jones, Bill Frelick, Ernie Holmes, I'm mentioning football players, Harvey Martin, Jim Covert, Russ Francis, and Refrigerator William Perry. And the second reason why this pay-per-view was fucking phenomenal, the greatest live singer I've ever seen in my entire life. I've seen him almost 20 times, three times with Black Sabbath, hopefully a fourth time on Monday, Ozzy Osbourne.
Nope. What album was he pushing at this time?
86 was Ultimate Sin that came out in February, I believe. So Ozzy put out that was Shot in the Dark, and he had just went solo a couple of years prior. So, okay. So your first match from Chicago was the Women's Championship between the Fabulous Moolah, who was champion for like 87 years, fighting Velvet McIntyre. Wasn't a bad match. Not a women's wrestling.
It was quick. What was it? It was like a minute?
Yeah. McIntyre goes for a splash on Moolah off the second turnbuckle. Moolah sidesteps her and misses the move. And McIntyre misses entirely. Moolah then takes advantage and does her magic and pins Velvet to retain her title.
And this was not long after the Madison Square Garden screw job.
Oh, the Spider-Woman thing? Yeah, that was pretty funny.
The Black Widow.
Yeah, Spider-Woman.
And forcefully pin Wendy Richter for the championship. Turned out to be Moolah.
Right. Your second match was a flag match between the deadbeat Corporal Kirshner.
AKA Leatherface in Japan.
The first Leatherface, yeah.
Yeah.
And he had to move to Japan because he couldn't pay his child support.
Damn.
Against
perfect place to move to.
You ain't kidding. Versus Nikolai Volkov. Volkov, of course, second by the classy one, the fashion plate, Freddie Blassie. Turns out Blassie throws his cane to Volkov. Kirshner catches it, hits Volkov with it, and successfully gets the pin. Nothing really to call home about with this particular match, except you win your flag bearing thingy.
You know, I enjoyed it. You know, granted the match was like a minute long, but, you know, it was great to see Corporal Kirshner at least, you know, memorialized in this one match at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, this is my first time ever seeing a flag match. So it was pretty cool.
They became a standard for a while in certain places. I know Sarge had a few. Nikolai Volkov was involved in a few more with the Bolsheviks, I believe. Mm. And then it progressively moved on to guys like Ranger Ross in WCW and as well as Del Wilkes, the Patriot, in Global and stuff like that.
Yeah, and there was a flag match. Who was it? Bret Hart versus...
That's right. We actually had the... Michael, my son, actually has the Bret Hart flag figure. He fought on... Who the hell did he fight in the flag match? Was it
the Patriot?
It was the Patriot, yeah.
Yeah.
But he actually has the figure from that night as one of his figures. It actually comes with a big Canadian flag.
Poor Del Wilkes.
Yeah. We'll be doing some Patriot stuff this summer. We already talked about it. All right, your third match was the WWF versus the National Football League Battle Royal.
This was awesome.
This was pretty cool. 20 men, including WWF wrestlers and NFL superstars. The big cat, Ernie Ladd, is joining commentary, which I loved.
Yes.
Love, love, love Ernie Ladd.
Anytime the man is talking, it's like butter.
Ernie Ladd does no wrong. We spoke about Ernie Ladd with the Black History Month coverage, and the big cat was one of the greatest big men in the business, was an innovator in promoting, and was a all-pro football player and a world-class professional wrestler, hands down.
And he's a preacher, too, or was a preacher.
He was a preacher prior to his passing, yeah.
Yeah.
NFL stars, like I mentioned, Jimbo Covert, Bill Frelick was a rookie at the time with the Atlanta Falcons.
Russ Frank, talking shit to
John Studd.
Big John Dudd. I mean,
Big
Studd.
John Dudd, yeah. Ernie Holmes, Harvey Martin, and William the Refrigerator Perry. WWF stars included, of course, the Eighth Wonder of the World, the King of the Battle Royals, Andre the Giant. At the time, World's Strongest Man, Ted Arcidi, Mr. USA, Tony Atlas, the Hart Foundation, the Killer Bees, Hillbilly Jim, the Iron Sheik, King Tonga, you know him better as Haku, God bless you, Pedro Morales, Bruno Sammartino, the Golden Boy, Danny Spivey, Big John Dudd, as Dave mentioned.
Yes.
A couple things before the end of the match. Stud tosses out the fridge, and the fridge puts his hand out. Now, mind you, a couple of the NFL guys were referees. Dick Butkus and a couple other guys were referees outside the ring with the regular refs.
Yeah.
So he puts his hand out to say, you know, no hard feelings, and Stud's like, you want to shake my hand? And, you know, Perry goes, yeah. Now, Perry, 350, pulls him out. Puts his hand out, pulls him over the top rope. So that was pretty interesting.
Yeah. One bad memory of this battle royal was having to see, Refrigerator Perry's tights riding up on him.
Yeah, he had that.
His fucking G-string.
Yeah, like a
G-string
singlet. Type of thing, like he was running.
Yeah, because his friggin' tights couldn't fit because he was over 300 pounds. Yeah. But he got the biggest pop out of all those guys.
Right. So when he pulls out Stud, you had Ed Too Tall Jones, and I think Dick Butkus was the two referees, and they were trying to break it up. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was Ed Jones, Dick Butkus. You know, I would love to hear stories about this.
Yeah, I would love
because
to have these guys
they
on.
Just threw these football players. Some of them, I believe, did have a wrestling background, but most of them didn't. And there was like dudes like specifically Bill Frelick, who, you know, he totally took the, you know, no friends part of the battle royal to heart. He was throwing out his own fellow football player teammates and no ties.
Yeah. Russ Francis was like the piss boy of them. He complained, I had that match won and so-and-so threw me over the top and blah, blah, blah. So some of the guys you know, were into it and they sold it. Some of the guys just were there for the payday, but it was good, I thought. I mean, for a battle royal, again, a battle royal is what it is. You can't really plan stuff out. You can't do any of your spots really unless you're you know, now it's more choreographed. Back in the day it was like, listen, you got 20 guys, you got 10 minutes, you know, this is how you're going out, and you know the only thing that you really can really plot out is the finish. So,
yeah, I'm curious how they work that out specifically with the football players, and what else did I want to say about this? You know, I felt, you know, Refrigerator Perry, William the Fridge, could have totally been a WWE WWF superstar, you know, after this, but you know, weren't the Bears like red hot at this point?
Yeah, the Bears were the champs. They would have. The year
Super Bowl shuffle.
Yeah, that's right. They won the championship the year prior. That was actually the first year I watched football.
And then we got Sweetness Walter Payton down the road at SummerSlam. What was it, 95?
Yeah, rest in peace, Sweetness. So at the end of the match, in the end, it was Andre and both members of the Hart Foundation. Andre, of course, eliminates Jim Neidhart and then Bret Hart to win the Battle Royal.
So. He fucking gorilla presses Bret Hart over his head and throws him over to Jim Neidhart. And real quick on Jim Neidhart, you know, he's the man who went to professional wrestling because pro football wasn't tough enough for him.
Jesse the Body made that mention every single time Jim Neidhart wrestled.
And I'm bringing it up again, too.
Every single time Jim Neidhart wrestled and Jesse Ventura called the match, he brought up the fact that that Jim Neidhart was too tough for the NFL. Okay.
Yeah.
And actually too tough to get a real job. And now he's like Robin Holmes and getting arrested. So,
he was Robin Holmes?
Yeah, he got arrested like last year, the year before. Can somebody put his mugshot up in the chat room so Dave can see it?
He was we need to put up that photo of me and Shining Wizards Matt with him.
Yeah, that's
fucking,
right.
Legends of the Ring, that was a great photo.
Right. All right.
With his shaved belly abs.
Okay, so your second main event of WrestleMania 2 was the WWF Tag Team Championship match between the British Bulldogs and the Dream Team, Greg Valentine and Brutus Bob Beefcake. He wasn't the Bobber at this point. I can't say Brutus Beefcake now without saying the Bobber for some reason.
Yeah, he was not the Barber.
He was not the Bobber. The Bulldogs were second by ex-Black Sabbath lead singer Ozzy fucking Osbourne and Captain Louis Albano, manager of champions. Good match.
This was my match of the,
this is the best
of the night.
This is the best match of the card, dude. This is hands
next
down.
To, next to Hogan and
next to Hogan
Bundy.
And Bundy, yeah, that was a good match, too.
But this was probably my favorite. Cause just, you know, me being partial to the Bulldogs. Bulldogs are my favorite tag team of all time. Dynamite is has to be the top five, you know, favorite wrestlers of all time for me. And only thing I could think of is if this match didn't go down, the only thing I could really think of is if it was the Bulldogs versus the Hart Foundation at WrestleMania 2. If I could book this card, I would have had the belts on the line with the Hart Foundation against the Bulldogs because they were tearing shit up since 85. I want to say 84, but I don't think that they were having matches together at that time just yet. I think it was early, like, 85. These guys were tearing the house down, you know, for the B-shows. And, you know, what would have been better if that happened at a WrestleMania? But regardless, the Dream Team against the Bulldogs was fucking phenomenal. Especially how it ended with Dynamite taking that wicked headbutt in the corner.
Now, as much shit we give Beefcake, the Dream Team worked. Mainly because Valentine was so good. You know, again, I'm not saying Beefcake was terrible, but he missed so many spots. And when you go back and watch some of these things, and even later on when he becomes a singles guy, clearly Beefcake was not your prototypical decent wrestler. He was like at best average. But Valentine was so good that he carried that team, and they were a good tag team. I enjoyed them. All right, so like
Dave, yeah, they were a solid tag team, and if anything, the methodical pace that Greg the Hammer Valentine worked at, you know, did well for Beefcake, who, you know, as you said, was pretty limited at the time. So they complimented one another.
Right. So now the match is – long match, actually, for the card, actually.
Yeah.
Davey Boy Smith pushes Valentine into the corner where Valentine knocks heads with a climbing Dynamite Kid.
And there was no mats on the floor and Dynamite –
right.
Takes the bump on the concrete.
Because back then, the athletic commissions of certain areas still didn't have the smarts to put mats on the floor. New York only started doing it about 10, 12 years ago.
Well, that's the thing. To my recollection, some places, you know, didn't require mats, so they didn't bring mats. But that doesn't mean you don't have, you know, they're banned from putting mats down. They
no,
can
I know.
Still put mats down.
It just wasn't a thing back then, you know. You have to understand, too, dude, wrestling really wasn't sanctioned until, like, sanctioned, like, as a legit thing until around this time. They were still using boxing rings. They were using out-of-date equipment, out-of-date arenas. This was this type of card was still in its infancy.
Yeah.
So none of this stuff was, like, readily, like, actually now with WrestleMania now, it becomes a project. There's a whole weekend involved, and there's things being planned, and a lot of stuff. Anyway, all right.
And Bret Hart is on record for saying, you know, specifically at this time, you know, rings were really rigid. They were tough, just like you said. They were like old boxing rings. There was like no give. But Vince's, according to him, had the best rings, but still, it felt like you were falling on a concrete floor for these things. And if you watch a lot of these old events, you notice like there isn't that much bounce, you know, when these guys get slammed or fall off the top rope or any of that.
So, so Dynamite Kid falls to the floor. Smith pins the Hammer to win the tag team title, and the Dream Team has their seventh month reign done. And that's pretty much it. Now, Dynamite couldn't even get back up for a while. Davey Boy was winded.
Well, what was it? Mean Gene had that. I don't remember what Mean Gene specifically said. He's like interviewing everybody. He's interviewing Captain Lou. He's talking to Ozzy. He's talking to Davey Boy Smith. And then he looks at Dynamite Kid and he's like, oh, let's get a word from him. All right, he's still down there. Davey Boy Smith. And immediately passes it on to him. I thought that was hilarious.
It's true.
Yeah.
Of course, Ozzy Osbourne, British Bulldogs forever. That was for me. Again, this was like I had just found Ozzy. I just got into rock music. I was never a rock fan. I was straight up geographically, I was a hip hop kid, and I had the rock tapes in the shoebox, and I was like rocking Ultimate Sin and all this other stuff. But yeah, man, this was a cool deal, and I just seen this, and again, it wasn't. And I'm sure the chat room doesn't – I mean, a lot of guys don't like these first couple of manias, like the first and the second one.
Well, you know, they're still, getting their feet wet with all this. I'll get into my opinions on WrestleMania 1. For the longest time, I never liked WrestleMania 1 until, a friend of the Shining Wizards, Mr. Anthony Quadro, explained to me what WrestleMania 1 was all about, and then I was like, oh. But I'll talk about that next week.
Yeah, absolutely. So now that match is done, screen goes down, and we take it to Los Angeles, California. Your announcers now are Jesse the Body Ventura, His Lordship Alfred Hayes, and the Mistress of the Dark, Big Titties herself, Elvira. Ooh. The Mistress of the Dark, I love that. It's so great.
That was a great movie.
Your ring announcer was Stagger Lee Marshall. How about that?
Yeah.
Love Lee Marshall, man.
And, funny enough, he wasn't in the next town reporting on what the next WrestleMania was going to be.
This is Lee Marshall here. I'm calling you from Beaver, Utah, guys. And call the hotline right now. And never mind.
I never got that. Why the fuck did they send him out to the location of the next Nitro while the current Nitro was going on?
Yeah, I'm over here in Sacramento, guys, and I got to tell you, the arena's kind of empty. It's kind of empty right now. Anyway.
But part of me feels that, obviously they cut that segment, but part of me kind of feels that I wonder if they left Lee Marshall in that town. Dude. And he didn't know that he got fired. He didn't know that the segment was cut. And he was just waiting for Nitro to come around. And
I don't know.
It's still there.
I don't know. I love the Fink. Don't get me wrong. Howard Fink was the best. But Lee Marshall, for me, did it for this card. I thought he did the best ring announcing. But
he wasn't with the WWF for very long.
No. Not at all. Your celebrities ringside were Ricky Schroeder from Silver Spoons, or Rick Schroeder. He was in NYPD Blue for a while. He replaced David Caruso.
He got a lot of booze.
Yeah. Robert Conrad, famous actor from the 70s and 80s, and famous...
The original James West from Wild Wild West.
Yes. Yes, he was. And, of course, Hall of Fame manager of the Los Angeles Dodgers, Tommy Lasorda, the godfather of Mike Piazza. All right.
Yes.
Your first match, let's get a bell. Thank you very much, Ricky Schroeder. Your first match was Ricky the Dragon Steamboat versus Hercules Hernandez, as Lee Marshall says.
Great Lee Marshall.
Dude, Lee Marshall was the shit. I was really pissed off he didn't get to call the main event match when he didn't have, because they made Tommy Lasorda to be the guest ring announcer.
Yeah, because he's the guest, special celebrity guest ring announcer.
Yeah, I love Lee Marshall, man. I'm sorry. Steamboat faces Hercules Hernandez in the first match. Hercules' debut, actually, I believe. Well, he was new to the company. Tries to hit a flying body press, but he misses. Steamboat follows it up with a flying body press of his own for the successful pinfall victory. It wasn't a great match. I mean,
it was a good match. It was pretty exciting for Ricky Steamboat got a lot out of Hercules that most people wouldn't get out of him on a normal basis.
This is true. Your second match was the adorable one, Adrian Adonis.
Oh my god!
Too much makeup on Adrian.
And he had the present bow on the top of his head.
Fighting Uncle Elmer. Now, this match is terrible. And again, Adonis, and I mentioned this last week. Adonis can definitely go.
Yeah.
Okay. Uncle Elmer, come to find out, I listened to Cabana's podcast last year, and he had Hillbilly Jim on. And apparently Uncle Elmer was not a nice person. Like, he was he demanded more money, and he was late to matches, and he no-showed a lot. And so now that I know that, and on top of him being a terrible fucking wrestler, I hated this match even more.
Yeah. Well, you didn't have to tell me that for me to hate this match. It was just I don't know why it was on there. It just sucks.
It's a filler match is all.
Yeah.
Next match was decent, though. The Funks.
Oh, this was great.
Terry and Haas fighting the, they call him Haas, but it was Dory.
Dory Funk.
The Funk Brothers, facing the JYD and Chico Santana.
And you know why this feud started in the first place, right?
Refresh me.
Our boy Mel Phillips decided to wear the hat of Terry Funk because he was like, you know, besides ring announcing, he was also, you know, taking the guys' clothes to the back. And, you know, Terry Funk handed him, you know, his hat and his chaps and all that shit. And, you know, poor Mel Phillips, if he didn't have enough troubles already being a pedophile, decides to put on Terry Funk's hat. So Terry Funk drags him into the ring and beats the holy shit out of him. And his boy, the Junkyard Dog, you know, came to save him. So, you know, that set up a bunch of those Saturday night's main event matches between Terry and JYD. But, of course, they had Haas and then later on Jimmy Jack Funk into the picture. So here we go with this tag team matchup.
So Terry Funk is the best, and I say that because you watch it again, and he totally dictates everything he does in the ring, outside the ring, you know, even down to getting his gear off, abusing the refs, abusing the fans, abusing his opponents. Terry Funk controlled almost everything he did in the ring, and he was very, very good at what he did. Dory Funk, more the technician guy. Dory Funk was the middleman of the team. He would always like try to get Terry away from the nonsense and kind of try to steer him away from that and concentrate on the match itself.
Yeah.
Terry Funk, to me, one of the best entertaining wrestlers on the planet.
Well, he was bumping like crazy during this entire match.
Right. So
it's like a rubber ball all over the place.
So the ref gets distracted by Dory, I think it was. And, of course, Jimmy Hart takes advantage, gives the megaphone to Terry, who cold-clocks the dog and gets him for the... I mean, he hit him. Like, it looked like he hit him anyway.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and they mentioned how, again, and the guys were not yard-birding it. This is what the announcers were saying about how hard the Junkyard Dog's head was. I don't want anybody accusing me of, don't be yard-birding, blah, blah, blah. But they mentioned his hard cranium because of his ethnicity. Again, can't get away with that now. If you were an announcer, you'd probably be fired for that.
So it's the Samoans and the black people who have big, thick skulls.
Right. Right.
Wow.
Right. And according to my friend John, Samoans are Mexicans that can swim. Ring the bell. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Okay. So, where were we? Okay, yeah, so he hits JYD with the megaphone and pins him for the win. Now here we are.
Now,
let's see. Dave, you want to take some calls? You want to 718? Want to have the birthday boy call in if he wants to? 718-878-6394?
Well, in the chat, he wants to give me a piece of his mind, so let's see what he's got to say.
All right, well, the next match for the WWF Championship, the steel cage, the blue cage.
The classic blue cage.
Which you can buy this as a toy, and it's like a couple hundred bucks now. And it comes
the
with
blue cage?
Yeah, you can buy the ring and the cage with the apron and everything. I'm so pissed. I wish I had the money.
And they put it out a while ago. I had like the first.
I had the very first one too. I'm talking about like 8 or 10 years ago, they re-released it.
With cage,
the cage, a blue cage, and everything you could buy.
Yeah, I was pissed too because I wanted to buy that too, but it's like you said, it was for a nice chunk of change.
Yeah,
so.
And it actually comes with Hogan and Bundy too. So,
I mean, yeah, that ring was phenomenal. That is the best wrestling toy ring that I've ever owned.
And we have a few Hulk Hogan's here. Actually, in my room right now, we have Thunder Lips on my shelf. We have Blue Hulkamania. We have with the blue gear on it, with the yellow and the red, we have that. We have the NWO with the blue and black.
For a man who's not a big Hogan fan, you sure got a lot of Hogan figures.
Well, that's Uncle Tank giving Mikey all the figures. Oh, here he is.
That call.
Oh, here he is. And the birthday boy is on the line.
What's going on, fellas?
Happy birthday, Tony.
Happy birthday.
Appreciate it, man. Appreciate it. Appreciate the love.
How old are you now, brother? 29?
No, 31, man.
31?
I'm over 30. Club.
All right. Well, welcome to the old Conjures Club. I'll be your tour guide. Me and Surfer will be your tour guides.
Exactly.
All right.
Hover around city now.
That's it. Geriatric Central, man. Now you're heading. Did you have a good day, brother?
Gotta start getting physicals and all that bull jive.
Did you have a good day or what?
Oh, yeah, man. Went out to eat, you know.
Oh, good.
Nothing too much. It's a celebration all week long here on the network. So
yeah, you get a whole week, huh?
That's right. Like a Hall of Fame week.
And we did a WrestleMania. We did a Hogan match where we can't complain about Hogan winning it. He won fair and square.
That was a great. It was a great birthday present you guys gave me. I said at least. Now next week you'll probably roll out something else.
No, we're actually doing No, we're doing WrestleMania 1. So you should you get three weeks of Hogan victories, and then we'll just destroy you for the summer. How about that?
Oh yeah, y'all gonna come out blazing that second week of April. Y'all probably gonna pull out an oldie but a goodie.
Yeah, maybe we'll
ring 93, right?
Yeah.
You know what, Dave? You know what? You are the bee's knees with that, my friend. Okay.
Thank you.
I'm not going to use vulgar language because it's my birthday. Now, next week, you bring up King of the Ring 93. I might have to get profane with you. But I'm staying calm this week.
It's okay. You know, I'll take calm. A photo for you with a working camera.
That's
right. And you can frame it.
So let's talk about the match, the championship match that was the steel cage. Hogan's ribs are taped up. He cuts the promo.
I got a question for Tony C.
Go ahead.
You know, what did you think about Hogan, you know, doing those deadlifts and those squats and all that kind of shit with all the weight and the pull-ups?
And that was Hulkamania at its finest, you know, getting his Rocky workout on prior to, after he had already done Rocky.
Even with the herniated disc and the bruised ribs?
Hey, that's the power of Hulkamania, man. You know, you feel no pain. No pain. No pain.
Hey, Tank put up the mugshot of Jim Neidhart, by the way.
Oh, I got
it. Don't do that to the Anvil, Tank. Come on.
Listen, we have to call, as Jesse the Body would say, I call it like I see it. Okay?
Yeah.
So you can't listen to me. I know you're a big defender. Every time you say something bad about one of Tony C's guys, like, you can't talk about him like that, man. You can't.
Well, you know, the Anvil, I wasn't a big Anvil guy, but I'm just saying, you know, after he got that beat down from DX when he thought he was a member, they tricked him into being a member, and he was downhill.
Listen, he took a picture with Dave last year, right? Right, and Dave, mm-hmm. Dave just mentioned this before. I don't know if you're listening. And the dude shaves his abs out of his body hair.
He shaves the body hair on his belly to make it look like he has fake abs.
Yeah,
yeah. He had a cameo on Total Divas. He made a cameo.
Yeah, because he's a criminal and his daughter's not. So.
and Dave, I got a bone to pick with you about your favorite tag team once. Yeah, you have the nerve and audacity to sit on this network and say the Bulldogs are the number one, are the best tag team ever. Yeah,
so what's the
right.
Best tag team, the Mega Maniacs, is that it?
No, I named one team in the chat room. Sting and Luger are better than them.
Wait, Sting and Luger? Are you serious?
I love how they win
multiple time tag team champion.
So, dude,
even with the heel and face Luger, didn't know whether Luger was a face or a heel.
Man,
got a question. You've been drinking with Mike Norenganger lately?
Yeah. He's booed
no.
out. Yeah, he had too many glasses of wine at the Olive Garden tonight. That's the problem.
No,
yeah,
the
man.
Bulldog Sting and Luger will wipe the floor with the Bulldogs.
I have a question for you, Tony C.
Go ahead, my friend.
Have you ever seen a British Bulldogs match?
Yeah, I'm not saying they weren't good.
Best
tag team. I'm not saying they weren't good.
Come on, man, the Road Warriors are the best team ever.
Or even the Road Warriors, yeah, the Road Warriors. I just
wait. Was Sting and Luger better than the Road Warriors?
First of all, if you say that, I'm hanging up on both of you, and I'm finishing. I'm finishing this show for Dolo, man. Ain't no way.
To my record, didn't Sting and Luger beat the Road? No, that was Sting and Booker T that
Sting
beat the
Booker
Road
T,
Warriors.
Yeah, don't get it twisted. That was an old Road Warriors, man. Those dudes won belts on every continent, man. What are you talking about?
I'm not sleeping on the Road Warriors. I'm not sleeping on them at all. But they're not the longest reigning WWF tag team champions. We all know who that is.
Demolition, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
So
I didn't like I didn't like WWF Legion of Doom, man. I wasn't a big fan of theirs.
Well, you know, they were getting squashed by freaking headbangers and. They were losing to
the natural disasters. Yeah, the natural disasters. Don't get me started.
The
right.
DOA.
All right. So
Road Warriors lost to Money Inc.
That's right. All right. What's
yeah, they lost to Money Inc. But the Bulldogs, number
the
one.
The Bulldogs are the best, bro.
Let me tell you something.
Number one?
If Dynamite Kid, and this is no joke, if Dynamite Kid would have stayed healthy, and this is not even a joke, and I'm not sticking up for Dave because you know I always go against Dave if I disagree with him. But if I'm serious though, if Dynamite Kid would have stayed healthy, they would have had one of the best runs as a tag team ever. Because at that point, those guys were so good,
and they were hugely over despite like no mic skills at all.
No mic skills, classic combination of power and speed. Even though Davey Boy doesn't get any credit for his speed, the guy can move for his size, you know.
Yeah, the guy was doing like kip ups. He was doing cartwheels, shit like that back then. Yeah.
So
I'm saying number one Bulldogs. We're gonna have to go.
You know what?
To the
if
fall on that
you
one,
you might have to. You might have to.
Who's number two? I got. Oh, this will tell me like who's if they're number one. Who's your number two?
Who's my number two? I haven't. It's definitely not Sting and Luger. I'll say that much. Maybe the Steiners.
Well, I give WWF Luger. I like him better than I like WCW Luger anyway, so you're not going to get objective for me.
To be quite honest, I wouldn't even rank Sting and Luger in my top 10, period. Actually, I do have a number two, and I just remembered right now. Motor City Machine Guns are my number two.
Motor City Machine Guns. Oh, you trolling right now. You sound like Rage.
That's what like Rage. So me.
Yeah, Rage is number one tag team. Is like the Hardy Boys or something. You think they're no?
Yeah, but Rage is also a decade younger than both of you. So let's not get that twisted. You guys give him a lot of shit, but he's 10 and 20 years younger than us. So.
That's what makes it funny. But
it does make it funny. All right, but I digress. Let's finish WrestleMania 2, and then we'll go into your tag team rant.
Tony C, our boy Java, wants to wish you a happy birthday.
Tell him I said I appreciate it, man. All right. It's nothing Java's like getting love when you're getting old. You know, the older you get, the more, you know, love you need, you know?
This is true, man. This
yeah,
is true.
The more, you know, dementia you go through with your Sting and Luger.
Yeah.
Look. At least I didn't say WWF Luger and Tatanka were better, because I'm slanted toward WWF Luger.
But hey, at least you didn't say the Allied Powers, so.
Can we please finish this match?
Or the Blue Brothers.
The Beverly Brothers. You know?
Yeah, they were pretty good.
All right. If you say so.
Hogan and Bundy in the cage. All right, I mentioned the build-up. So let's talk about the match itself. Of course, Bundy gets the tape off Hogan's ribs at one point. Hogan fights back. And now here's the spot of the night. And this is where I laughed my ass off as early as this afternoon again. But Hogan fights it off, rams Bundy's head into the cage, right? So Bundy goes down, and the camera stays on Bundy way too long. Because he couldn't, it took him like at least a minute to juice.
Mm.
Like he couldn't, it was pretty odd. And Heenan sees this. Heenan's trying to cover Bundy up at this point. If you look on the tape, he's covering him up. Bundy can't cut himself. Bundy could not. Maybe this is why Bundy went from being the main eventer to the fucking midgets.
To the midgets, yeah.
Right, to the mid, right.
Hey.
Exactly.
Don't knock those midgets.
But I'm just saying, though, like, I think that's the one of the reasons why. Maybe Bundy wasn't too quick on the take, you know what I'm saying? So now he gets back up, Hogan tries to scoop slam Bundy, of course, missed it. Bundy hits an avalanche and a big splash on the Hulkster, but of course Hogan does the asthma attack and hulks up.
He hulks up.
And hits the power slam on Bundy, followed by the leg drop. So now
he only used the power slam on Bundy, if I remember correctly. He never just did a straight up body slam, but he fucking power slammed this dude.
There was a wrestling challenge. Yeah. There was a wrestling challenge. I wish I could find the match. Hogan fights I think it was one of the Moondogs, right?
Uh huh.
And he actually not only does he power slam the Moondog, but he gives him a suplex. And I was like, wait a minute, this is weird. A suplex? And a power slam? I guess Hogan was feeling quite rambunctious this morning.
He was feeling spry that night.
He took some extra vitamins.
Yeah, he was on something.
So now
don't make accusations like that, okay?
He says don't make accusations.
I'm just saying my sources were telling me, you know.
All right, so Hogan,
there could have been some medical aid, you know, street pharmacy.
That's slander any way you slice it. That's slander any way you slice it, okay?
I got a quick question for you, Tony C. You know, it kind of regards this match. You know, Bundy had a rematch with Hogan later on in Saturday night's main event, and Bundy hit the avalanche and asked for a 5 count. And Hogan kicked out at 4. What do you think about that? That, you know, Bundy got a legit 3 count on him.
Oh, here you go.
How do you
if
feel
the match
that,
goes to 5, of course he's going to kick out at 4. That's what Hulkamania does.
But the real rules are that he's supposed to be down for 3, but the guy kicked out at 4. That doesn't make any sense.
This,
you can't change rules like that.
The bottom line is, did we walk out of the event with the title?
He did.
That's the only thing that matters.
But he has to live.
Rules are no rules.
He has to beat the rest of his life knowing that he kicked out, you know, after 3.
Sting kicked out after 3, and somehow we didn't leave DC with the belt, so
Okay.
You know, it's the power of the man, the politics of the man.
All right, so
keeping his foot on a brother's neck.
So Hogan hulks up, he hits the power slam on Bundy, follows a leg drop. He climbs the cage, Bundy catches him. Hogan kicks Bundy, climbs over the top, and climbed onto the floor while Bundy was trying to get out of the cage. And
I loved when Hogan kicked Bundy off of him so he could climb over the cage, because Bundy did, like, he just put out his arms like he was, like, free-falling from a plane or something like that. It just looked hilarious. It looked great.
Right.
Him, like King Kong literally falling off the Empire State Building.
Correct.
Now with the blue cage, the blue cage has a lot of memorable moments. But to me, my most memorable moment of the blue cage is when Brett was going for the title on Raw, and they slammed the door. I think, was it Austin that slammed the door on his head?
Yeah.
No. Then he goes on a tirade afterwards.
No, my favorite blue match moment was actually, I was at the Garden. It was Hogan and the Boss Man, and Hogan throws the superplex from the top rope. Yeah. From the top of the cage. That was my favorite. I was actually on one of Mega Powers' Hulkamania tapes.
Yeah.
Who was he going against, Dave?
Big Boss Man.
Yeah, was that on a Saturday night?
No, bro, that was a Saturday.
No.
It was a Saturday afternoon. It was a matinee show.
It was on Saturday night's main event later on.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
They had the exact same match on Saturday.
Exact same match, okay.
But they had Zeus, knock out Hogan before the match started.
Yeah.
Yeah, I said Zeus wrong. I meant Zeus.
Like when you say Sting, you have to go Sting. All right, but after the match, of course, Hogan, the best part of the whole match was Hogan catching Heenan in the cage, and he just he beats the snot out of Heenan, giving him the atomic knee drop, and Heenan like, for some reason, Heenan took bumps really well.
He's a wrestler.
Well, he was, yeah, for a while.
I think he went under the name, like, Handsome Bobby Heenan or shit like that.
He takes the ultimate, like, Hogan must have gave him, like, an extra vitamin knee drop, and he friggin' flew halfway across the ring and out to the bounced out of the cage onto the floor.
Yeah, it's like that fucking video game All-Stars or whatever it was a few years back.
Yeah, that game's awesome. We love that.
It was like a Kurt Hennig, like 360 over the top of the cage into the audience.
Yes, Pastor. Hogan did do a superplex from the top of the cage. It's on documented video, and I was at the event.
Hogan has more moves than Cena. Cena only had like six.
Yeah.
Hogan had more than Cena.
And good old. And then you brought up Zeus, Debo.
Zeus.
Next thing I know, I'm in Debo Pigeon Coop, sweating like a slave.
Yep.
That was a great movie.
When he showed up, I really thought they may try to put the belt on him.
I don't know.
Because Hulkamania was at its height.
Going for Zeus. I mean, Zeus versus Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 6, but they didn't think that was going to fly, so they switched it to Warrior.
A brother main event and main event. That would have been something.
So there it is. There's my favorite WrestleMania.
Oh, wait. You trying to think about Zeus? I mean, Zeus. You know, main eventing an actual WrestleMania? That was not going to
be. I mean, if Lawrence Taylor could do it, Zeus could have did it.
Because Lawrence Taylor is a fine athlete.
Yeah, Zeus is the dream.
Zeus. Was a murderer from jail. He was trying to kill Hulk Hogan in the ring.
Zeus went to jail for mortgage fraud last year for legit.
That's
documented, son. I ain't making that up. He went to jail, dude. He, like $300,000 $3 million in mortgage fraud.
What?
Yeah, he went to
jail.
He
tried to Debo somebody for real.
He tried to Debo somebody.
Well, is it No Holds Barred coming out on Blu-ray soon? So
we get another call. Hold on a minute.
We got a call?
Yeah, Turnbuckle Throwbacks. What's your name? Where you from?
Hey, guys. It's Mark in Detroit. I follow you under Java Junkie on the Facebook page.
Hey, what's going
on? Yo, what's up, Mark?
Hey, I didn't want to try to squeeze in, but I figured just for the heck of it, I would, you know, simply because I've had this thing on my mind about Hulk Hogan. Now, I'm not his biggest fan in the world.
Oh, no.
No, well, let's be fair. I mean, the dude worked his butt off. I'll give him his dues. It's just that he just seems so one dimensional to me, and I always kind of preferred the dudes that could, you know, like the Arn Andersons and the, but then again also the Hayabusas, you know, guys like that that could change things up just a little bit.
Yeah, you weren't the only one.
I was the only. Yeah, kid. But I mean, I'll give him his respect. You know, any day of the week and twice on Sundays. Because initially I had a thought that, you know, when McMahon put him in that position as the promoter, you know, to carry his promotion after the help of people like Mr. T and Cyndi Lauper to really bring them into the forefront, I really don't think that you could have replaced Hulk Hogan with anybody else and got the same deal.
Yeah, we spoke.
He just had that intrinsic value to him.
We spoke about that in length.
I'm sorry?
No, we spoke about that. We spoke about that in length in January when we did our Hulk Hogan, Hulkamania 30th anniversary, whatever it was. And then we talked about that, and I mentioned that that exact thing. I'm like, there was nobody at the time that got the hype, that got the push, and he was larger than life, and it was all a marketing thing, man. He had the look, he had the charisma, and he was the only guy at the time that they could have did that with. Now, granted, almost every bad guy they put him up against was so much better talent-wise. I mean, wrestling-wise. The Orndorffs of the world. The Pipers of the world.
But you weren't giving them the belt.
You know why? Because you didn't have to. I mean, you could have gave Orndorff the title. We just talked about that. You could have gave Andre could have took the belt before WrestleMania. He could have won it back. You could have done a lot of things, but it wasn't necessary.
Okay, well, Phil, can I interrupt for just a moment, please, sir? I think that when you talk about putting the belt on other people like Orndorff and Andre, is that really? If you think about it, either from the continuity or just from the promoter's point of view, is that I personally feel it would have done more damage to them as their characters and their usability, if that's even a word, to have done that. Because you needed Hogan to be that standard bearer during the early mid-80s through to 88, you know, you couldn't have him drop the belt to them in any other way than what they did with the Ted DiBiase angle. With Orndorff specifically, Orndorff was a mid-card star. I mean, superstar in the mid-card, but I think he would have killed his career. He would not have had the same success that he had. And I still feel that he did, even when he moved to WCW, where his career ended up, you know, ending, unfortunately. And I loved Orndorff, and I will always love Andre the Giant. He will always be my favorite. But to put the title on those two or anyone else at that period in time in either a clean match or a slightly dirty match beyond the DiBiase angle would have been damaging, you know, to the WWF at that time, in my opinion.
Right, because you're trying to put asses in the seats. You're trying to sell merchandise. You're trying to – but.
It's that too, but I mean, it's like beyond that. Look at your roster of talent. You have to maintain your talent to put those rear ends in the seats. Okay, so you have to not only cultivate Hulk Hogan as your uber superstar, but you also need your supporting cast, like your Roddy Pipers, your JYD, your Valentine, your Andre and all that other stuff. And believe it or not, I'm calling Andre a supporting cast at this point. But then again, he'd already been wrestling for 20 years at this point.
Most of the guys, but most of the guys that they brought in that, after that boom in the mid 80s were all guys that were successful in different territories. So now you're bringing these guys in for quote unquote the supporting cast. I can honestly say now, as an older wrestling fan, I would have took the extra step as a promoter and took maybe two or three of those guys and gave them an extra 8 weeks of a story and had the belt change hands. The belt didn't change hands that much anyway at that point there anyway.
It's when heels did win titles, you know, it was more or less for like transitional, you know, period. So if a guy like Andre were to win the belt, it wouldn't be for very long anyway.
Well, you see, here's the thing, too. The problem with bringing Andre into the conversation, David, is that Andre transcended the legendary WWF, WWWWF title. Maybe there were one too many W's in there, but he transcended it. You know what I mean? So it's like, to me personally, from my point of view, is that there's the WWF title and its various incarnations, and even higher than that is Andre the Giant, because he had that mysticism about him that drew you in, even when he was crotchety and old and could barely move around when he was part of that tag team with Haku. Now, the one thing, the main reason why I decided to go ahead and ball up and call in is, especially while Tony was still on the phone, and thank you for passing along the birthday wishes, David, because I hadn't planned on calling in, but Tony, happy birthday, brother. I mean, welcome
to
the club.
Man.
Hey, much love. And I loved your last call-in that I got to listen to. I don't remember if it was the last show or the show before when you guys were just going to town. It was awesome to listen to. And I really appreciate that you called in and you contributed to the show like that. But the one thing, and I wanted to especially get your input on this too, in addition to Phil and David, is that the one person that I feel was the quintessential bad guy to Hulk Hogan throughout the years was Bobby the Brain Heenan.
Yeah.
Now, I'll always have a soft spot for Mr. Heenan, and I'll always call him Mr. Heenan because he's had that respect for me, because I actually caught a clip of on a videotape that someone had sent me when we lived overseas from the AWA of Bobby Heenan in his finest. But I would kind of like to get your all's opinion, because this is still, you know, in line with the WrestleMania aspects of things. If you feel that is accurate, and just to basically get your take on that as a whole.
Well, my thing with Heenan is, I was, you know, he wasn't the biggest Hogan supporter, and I kind of think he ruined Bash at the Beach 96 because if he would just played it off, it would have went over better than what it. I mean, it went over, no question. But I just feel like if he would have just, you know, kept it, you know, a little more professional, it felt like it was personal. It always felt like it was personal, even though it may have been a work. If it was a work, then, hey, you did a hell of a job. But I always respect Bobby Heenan, man. He was a heel manager. He was a heel, you know, voice. And I always enjoyed him. But when it came to that night at Bash at the Beach, I just think he could have just sold it. But that's just my opinion. You know, you guys go.
Actually, in real life, they were both very close.
Tony, when you say Bash at the Beach, can you refresh my memory?
Bash at the Beach 96, the night Hogan turned heel. And if you didn't, you know, you don't remember, everyone's like getting hyped because Hogan's coming out.
Which they should end up being okay.
Yeah, which side is he on? But, you know, I just thought that if he would have been like Dusty, and the rest of those guys thinking he was coming to stay at WCW, it would have went over a little better. But nonetheless, it did go over. So, and it made me happy. So,
But those guys were actually both like best of friends in real life. Actually, Hogan did the foreword for Heenan's book. I forgot what it was called. It was like Chair Shots and something or other. But they were very close friends. Heenan, you know, would say like in shoot interviews and such that he always wanted to manage Hulk Hogan. But, you know, just the way that it worked, you know, they were always the best adversaries. And yeah. Part of that worked because, you know, Heenan was on television all the time. If he wasn't managing people and cheating, you know, in the ring, he was talking shit you know, on the broadcast on primetime. So he was all over Hulk Hogan, you know, as like the number one, you know, protester against Hulkamania. And especially at, what was it, at King of the Ring 93, I think he was the first to declare Hulkamania was dead.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
So, you know, even though Fuji right, was the one who really got the one over on Hogan, but it was always Bobby Heenan who was always chasing to one up Hogan and to end his career. So yeah,
if you go back and listen to the Goldberg match, him call that Goldberg match from Nitro. Oh my God, he almost came.
Just like at Royal Rumble with Lex Luger.
Yep. Yep. Freaking Bobby Heenan. I found out later it was a work, but if you'd asked me when I was younger, did Bobby Heenan hate Hulk Hogan with a passion? That would have been my opinion.
Yeah.
I never had a problem with Bobby Heenan. He was well respected by his peers, and he was very, very influential coming from the AWA. And another thing, too, about Bobby Heenan is Bobby Heenan told a really good story.
Yep.
And he was and he was always a heel manager. So, again, you talk about you supporting Cash, talk about bringing guys in to fight Hogan. Heenan always had a good stable. Heenan always had a good word. He was quick, whether he was managing or behind a microphone, and always talked good about the business. When you watch documentaries, of course, outside of the Ultimate Warrior DVD, but that's another story.
Yeah.
But there was a time where I thought, I mean, to me, like guys like Gary Hart and Jim Cornette, I hold the candle to because I think they're my favorites. But, you know, you got to put Bobby Heenan right up there with them and the Lou Albanos of the world and the Freddie Blassies. The contributions these guys made after they stopped wrestling, I don't think can be replicated now. Like, if a guy would leave wrestling now and become a manager, I don't think they can do what those guys have done. It's a different era, different time, and it's all written differently now. It's all different. It's a different bag, I guess.
It would have to go in a completely different direction because, you know, it's been done to death. People know the story inside and out. So it's kind of hard to really – well, you can't really replicate it. You just got to do something completely different.
And when the NWO used to come to the broadcast booth and Bobby used to run, I tell AA all the time, that's classic video. And he'd hop over the announce table. That's Heenan.
Well, you see, the thing to me is that, like, Heenan was your quintessential manager that did manage to bridge the gap that existed from your classy Freddie Blassie's, your Mr. Fuji, to now. Okay. Yes. Where out of all those people, and as much respect as I have for the old school, and that whole old school is where my heart is. And I think me and David had already discussed this, you know, privately, is that, old school wrestling is what's started to get me back into the current product now, where you do lack the Bobby Heenan, which I think would be a tremendous asset now to really freshen things up. Thankfully, we at least have Paul Heyman, but he was the quintessential manager during the 80s to be the counterpoint to the Hulk Hogan. So yes, you can have your Hulk Hogan as your marketing staple and all that other, but the antithesis to him was, in my opinion, not a wrestler, but the manager in Bobby Heenan. You know, and so that cannot, in my opinion, cannot be discounted. And that was probably one of Vince McMahon's best hires from the AWA outside of Hulk Hogan, and especially discounting the Ultimate Warrior. I'll never be a fan of his. I mean, I'll respect his passion. And I'll respect his passion for his vitamin B12 shot to the ass.
Him and Goldberg.
If you would catch my... don't get me started on Goldberg.
Yeah, but let's not. Anyway, we got to wrap this up. We've been going way too long.
Anyway, I appreciate you taking my call. Tony, happy birthday.
Appreciate it again, man.
Yeah, you know, happy birthday again, Tony. And thanks for answering my question, guys. And have a great night, and I hope to talk to you guys again soon.
Thanks for calling in, man. Anytime, brother. Be good.
Have an awesome night, Mark.
Yep. You too, guys. Thanks. Bye.
Take care. Peace.
All right, that was the Java Junkie. I told him to call in tonight because he's like, oh, you know, I just said call in, man. Call in. But
yeah, he's all riling up Tony C with Warrior and Goldberg.
You see, Tony C's Tony C's a line stepper. Like you are, Tony. You're an habitual line stepper. Because
I'm not Rick James, okay? I don't cross lines.
You a line stepper, man. You rile up all these people. They don't want to call and talk to us. They want to call and talk to you.
Yeah.
No. This is y'all show. I just ride. I'm not even riding shotgun. I'm riding in the back seat.
Goddamn.
Actually, portion of the show.
Actually, Tony, you almost did ride shotgun because a couple days ago, Dave didn't know if he was gonna be able to come on, and I was like, you gotta let me know if you're gonna come on or not because I can't stop the show now. We're doing it live. I was gonna call Tony and be like, yo, man, you step in and tag in and.
I was going to recommend Tony, too, just so I could tear him apart the following week.
You know what? I would walk. You know, I wouldn't even make a run in, Dave and Phil. I would just walk down the aisle like Hollywood did at Bash at the Beach. I come in slow. And you won't know if I'm coming in to save the show or sabotage it. You won't know.
All right,
yeah,
brother.
A couple months later, everybody's going to say it was such a bad idea.
All right, well, listen, brother, we're going to let you go. Have a great birthday, rest of your birthday.
All right, man. I enjoyed you guys, man. Appreciate the love, and I'm going to hang up and listen to you guys finish up.
All right, we'll talk to you over the weekend, brother.
It's my birthday week going on the rest of the week on the network, fellas.
That's right, so we'll
stay
talk.
Stay tuned.
We'll catch up with you on Saturday with Will and him.
All right, fellas.
All right, happy birthday, Tony, happy birthday, and brother, enjoy your Hulk Hogan win at WrestleMania 2.
That's right, Dave. That's right.
A legit win. One of the few.
And to be official, he was 7-2 at WrestleMania. Just to keep that in mind. 7-2, buddy.
Now he's keeping score. Line step.
All right, fellas.
All right, man.
Good night.
Man. Happy birthday.
Thanks.
All right. The line stepper, the hot stepper, the resident Hulkamaniac, Tony C.
The all luster.
Right. Start wrapping this bitch up, huh?
Yeah, it's right, getting late.
All right, it is WrestleMania 2 is in the books. We have one more show before our big WrestleMania weekend.
WrestleMania 1.
WrestleMania 1. And then right after WrestleMania 1, the rant will kick off WrestleMania weekend at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, starting off with Surfer's Fun Show, and then we'll go right into Saturday with the wrestling call-in show and the whole
horror. It'll be an exciting weekend.
It's going to be great. Those guys are really good. They're funny. You got a little bit of the guys tonight. I know Rage called in earlier, so thank you to Rage, and thanks for Java to call in, and Uptown Georgie with the Carlos Colon stuff. Really, really good stuff from our callers.
I had no idea that he was there at, you know, seeing those WWC shows, rather.
I think it's cool that our fans respect... They're there. They respect the old school as much as we do, and they appreciate us. We appreciate them, and thanks to everybody tonight in the chat room. You guys are
that's what makes this show as awesome as it is, because we got amazing listeners who, you know, they have some amazing opinions, and also they were a part of this history too. So just added incentive as to why this is the number one show on the Shining Wizards Network.
your new recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment broadcasting. We are the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast.
The new generation of sports journalism.
That's right. Of course, we're on the Shining Wizards Network, shiningwizardsnetwork.com, rantemradio.com. We're on geeklife.radio.com, Buzzsprout, Audio Boo, Stitcher, iTunes. Shining Wizards Network has some fantastic shows, man. Besides the Wizards, obviously, the Godfathers, our brothers from other mothers, I got the Midnight Jury, the Neckbreaker Podcast, Two and a Half Wrestlers, Fallen Angels, Apex Radio, Wolfman Jack Foley, Just Incredibles, Pro Wrestling 101, you know, and of course we have Lopez once in a while getting his shit on.
And, you know, I was the first guest on the Shining Wizards, period. So I'm the reason why all this happened. So you can thank me directly.
RantEMRadio.com. You got the Rant on Tuesdays. You got us on Wednesdays at 9 p.m. Wrestling Colon Show with Will I Am Morgan at 11 p.m. You got Surfers. What Are You Reading on Sundays at 6. Shout out to Don, Tony, and Kevin Castle Show, Wrestling Soup, The Bloke Show. Shout out to those guys. Mega Powers.
Big up.
Big up to Mega Powers Radio, NXT Cast, Metal Thunder Radio, Tattoos and Touchdowns, and Uncle Eddie and the Ham Radio guys.
Yeah.
So that's going to wrap it up for us.
It's what the world is listening to.
It's true. It's true. Great Bear. So this is Dave. Play some hell. Dave wanted me to play this. Bay Debra. And I just. Oh, hell yeah. This guy's. It's crazy. Again, thank you to everybody in the chat room tonight. Sorry about the audio snafu. Show will be up in a little while. Maybe tomorrow. Depends on how much sleep I get. Dave, anything before we go?
Beat Debra. Oh, hell yeah.
All right, guys. We're out of here. Have a great night. Have a great week. Take care of yourselves, each other. Avoid the clap. And we'll be back next week. Peace.
Raise hell.
Raise hell.
Beat Debra, so silent, no one can't hear it, not even the police.